How's that sounding on your end, Jan? Sounds pretty bad on mine.
Your voice was breaking up a little there.
Is that music breaking up?
Music sounds okay.
Sounds terrible. I don't know what it is. I rebooted my computer twice.
I've heard it like this before, John. After a while, it got better. So let's hope.
Yeah, we kind of never had this problem before. Only the past couple of weeks.
Last week it smoothed out after a while.
Yeah, it's been up. Let's just see if we can get Gerard. You got a line to call Gerard in on? I'll call him on my phone.
I sent him a Skype message. You know, I'll try and call him.
Is that music still coming through okay for you, Dan?
That was breaking up pretty good on the music.
Oh, man. Seriously, I just called Rod. He's going to try to get in. But he said he couldn't get in. He did get in. It was all broken up. Is that a problem still?
I've sent Gerard a Skype message, called him, but I haven't got him yet.
I just talked to him on the phone.
Did you get him?
He's trying to get in. Doesn't shut that door. It's horrible.
There he comes. He's on.
I'm totally frozen up on my side.
Hey, you guys are still breaking up.
Yeah, I'm seriously defunct on this end.
I can't hardly. It's like you're talking in water, like bubbles.
Yeah.
You're breaking up too, Gerard.
Yeah, it's bad. I've tried and tried, and I can't. I can't make it better.
We'll do away with any of the regular formalities that we have going on when we start. We'll just have the conversation and see where we go. We'll just date the call. It's today is April 1st. I forgot that until just recently.
April Fool's.
I didn't get a chance to give you a problem.
That's
here.
Why we're having trouble. It's April Fool's Day, John.
Did you all know that?
Anyway,
maybe that's it. You know, I may even try to get the tech on the phone because I'm wondering if they're forcing us over into the other one.
I don't know, but this is horrible.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's see where we can go. One of us will try to hold on, and we'll just have a conversation. Okay, anyway, today's Monday, April 1st, 2019. We're just going to open up with an open forum, and we'll see where we go from there. So anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6. So we're going to open up calls right away, star 6, into the queue if you have a question or comment. We only have one person in the queue at the moment, and we'll take her first. It's Crystal. Crystal, you got the mic. You wanna control the board here, Gerard, and we'll see how things go.
Yeah, I'm not even signed in. I'm gonna go ahead and sign in.
Top 6. Anybody wants to get into the queue? Crystal, go right ahead. Crystal, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hey,
how are you?
Good.
Okay. Well, I went to the course today, and I sent you over the copies. I also filed and recorded on my land records, which I guess they were all a little surprised there. And there's something else. Because I said definitely I wanted to do the. I filed the complaint on them, and I'm going to be sending them elsewhere. I gave them the truth, sworn affidavits on everything, and even for the $20, you could file a case. Anything over $20, you could have a common law, subrogation, everything I've been following throughout the years. So I guess they looked a little like, okay, because they wasn't expecting this kind of reaction. Also, the under the Foreign Agent Act of 1938, none of them are registered. And so what this attorney did, they stole my house on a national holiday, on Martin Luther King, and that was the 19th to the 21st, because courts were closed. The attorney went and put his name on my property on the 18th, the day before it even happened, which was criminal. And he put his name on the property. And then 2 weeks later, I guess he put it in his family or a friend's name under another company name. And so I just found out it's another set of attorneys. The attorneys showed up, one, and it was electrical files. He filed, so anybody can go on there and go over my case. And believe you me, what is in there? They're like they seen where I was. They embezzled $125,000 from me. Also, all my warranty deeds and everything. You know, so because I was writing it off before, so I put in all the the different complaints, and then I put like nine important papers on my land records today, this morning, and then I had them emailed back to them. So, but everybody definitely needs to do with the affidavit, because even when you put your affidavit, it's like when they try to steal before, you put your sworn affidavit in, alrighty, and they have to take it. You know, and they have to show proof of claim, you know, who with the contract and all that. Anything over $20, you can have a common law jury. And everybody best learn the courses of the NLA, because going through this, these past since 2013, 2014, if it wasn't for the classes on the phone and meeting people, you know, everybody put it together, and it was so, so helpful knowing that the sheriff is the highest in the land and learning about our Constitution, you know. But they want to eject me from my property. I got the court on April 15th. And I'm just trying to get a few other things in place pertaining to the property. and to see how they're going to handle that. Because like what President Trump said, they don't even have no jurisdiction over a fly. And I guess with the sheriffs and stuff like that, because I heard them making some mentioning of the sheriffs again, you know. So we'll see what's what. But did you get the papers that I emailed you? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. When did you send them? I have to check my mail.
Yeah, I put them in your bin, John, here a while ago.
Okay.
In your Skype.
Okay.
Oh, you got it, Jim.
Yeah, I'm still having a lot of problems. Gerard, were you able to get the what do you call it, up?
I don't see him right now, what? John. He was here before.
Yeah, I just saw him a minute ago. Yeah, but he's gone.
He's smarter than I thought.
He's
smarter than I thought. He beat it out of here. Okay.
All right, well, let's see where we go. I'm having a really hard time understanding people. I mean, I think I got most of what you said, Crystal, but you're breaking up on me. Anything else you want to?
Basically, that is it. I will speak to you off, you know, because we're trying to recruit people and the kids, parents and all on this, the, you know, so they can learn this because it's so important. And with the nightmares that we got going on in the school system and they're just taking everyone's home by the clutch, especially up in our state. When I was sitting in court today, they called out a name, and I'm like, wait a minute, I know that person. And I called the party. I said, do you know that your mother's house is foreclosed? They were clueless. I said, they're just doing clusters of people, seniors or whomever, you know what I'm saying? And they had no idea. And I also found out, when they, I never got no summary judgment or nothing like that. And when they sent it out back in 2014, they sent it to the wrong address and to the wrong town, and I never received it.
Wow.
So I think I sent you that copy also.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll have to take a look at it when I get it. So where are you standing right now? I don't know if you mentioned exactly what are they doing now.
I'm still in my house. I got to go back on the 15th of April. And I guess they want to eject me from my property. They said that I refuse to leave my property, which I put that in as a sworn affidavit, and it was notarized, and also the volume and page. You know, show me proof of claim, you know. I am the sole owner of this property, and that attorney.
Didn't you file a criminal complaint?
Yes. Oh. Let me get back to that. They would not. As a matter of fact, the town nor the police refuse. They said we're not filing nothing in your behalf. So it's like they're all. It's horrifying up here.
Well, what about the federal court?
They are all working together against me.
Wow. All right. Well, do you feel that you still have more time? I mean, I know we were going to do a few things, and kind of waiting.
Well, I got until I go back to 15th. I have some 15th of April, because I guess that's when they will probably say, okay, we want you out that house on such and such a date. But there's some things they're trying to get put through also. And I'm just praying and staying close to Jehovah, because I guess because I fought all these years, they're using me as an example. You know, because I've been representing myself. And four sets of attorneys recuse themselves. The judges recuse themselves. And the one who started all this mess, he's a retired judge, which he stole hundreds of thousands of people's property. And it's just like, who's the injured party? And he said, he's the one, I said, am I a public servant of this court? He says, no. I said, is this my grand jury? He said, no, I'm the grand jury. I said, you just committed treason. And that's what they've all been doing. They all been committing treason on each and every one of us. And
mm-hmm.
people better
Well,
learn.
No doubt about it, yep.
And people better learn the vocabulary and what you're talking about, because they were so shocked. Like, well, wait a minute, you know. And I asked for a common law jury, because when you go into the courts up here, it's only between the judge and the attorneys. So you're guilty before you're guilty. You don't even have a chance to prove that you're innocent, because they're going to take it. It's like, so what? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And another thing which I'm very, very disturbed, I've owned my properties well over almost 40-something years. Do you know, and I had quite a few properties in my day, and I sold them, I paid off my house. Do you know I'm not going to come out with 1 cent? They're going to leave me totally penniless.
Well, what did we do for you? Did we do an amicus curiae, or did we do the notification of the crime, or what did we do?
I don't even remember. Everything I did, we just filed through, but this is just totally criminal.
Oh, no doubt, but in your case is specifically because you're showing proof of payment. There was something about a second loan that came by that they tried to do or tried to take
right.
out on you. Did that second loan ever go through or anything?
Yeah, the whole thing is just like when you go on that and you look up my case, you're going to see it, and it's just like, how in the world did I pay? It was a quarter of $1 million, 125 and 127. And it was paid off in 6 days, so somebody stole the money. I never received that 1 cent. I wouldn't be in the mess I'm in. You know, and it's just
did you try to report that crime?
I did, but they won't take any records.
No, but you see, I wouldn't know exactly where to report that crime. Maybe it's a federal crime, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to also send it to our congressmen and all the rest of them, and we'll send it to Washington, you know, and as I said, all the paperwork, the sworn affidavits, just, you know what, it's got to get out there. And another thing, too, everybody better go on your website, look under illegal foreclosures. There has been in the United States $43 trillion worth of illegal foreclosures. $43 trillion. And all this is going through these attorneys, bankers. It's all corrupted, what they've been doing to people. I think everybody needs to put a complaint in on each and every one of them, or a counter. But I said basically that's all basically what I've been going through. But I'm just making things a matter of prayer. Psalm 55:22. I place it on Jehovah's hands and leave it. And just follow through what I got to follow through on, and just share the information, because this is, you know, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Florida, California. I guess it's the biggest Ponzi scam, and it started with that Shelton Silver, and he's the one who started this mess over 44, 45 years ago. He was the former attorney
general.
And
he's in jail right now.
Yeah, he's in jail, but he's the one who got this scam going. And it's just like when they sat there and arrested, I mean, those celebrities that their kids got into these Ivy League colleges, and they don't have, you know, an IQ of even a firecracker. And the same thing, we got all these illegal attorneys, illegal teachers, illegal social workers, you know, because who paid for their tests? And I knew there was something wrong even in the court, because here I never took a day of law. I never went to college for law. And here, just the basic common sense questions. And knowing that the affidavit showing proof of claim, show me and everything I submitted, a sworn notarized affidavit. And when I do the subrogation, you know, and I send them the certified, and you know, they had to respond showing proof of claim, showing that it was, you know, that it wasn't a fraud. They never responded on any of them. And now a lot of the legal documents they're sending, they're not signing off. Or it's just total chicken scratch, so you don't know who's signing, you know. But as I said, those affidavits and those getting everything notarized, show me proof of claim, show the proof of claim, due process and all that. But I think that's basically all I had to share with you.
All right. What I'll do is tomorrow I'll take a look and see what papers we have already filed, and then we'll try to get a hold of you, and we'll see maybe what the next move is. I think we need to do something, you know, with an amicus curiae, making the point that now that the judge is that he is really participating in this crime by continuing this, you know. Well, anyway, let's see where that goes from there.
Okay. All righty. So.
All right. Yeah, hang on 1 second. Hey, Jen, is anyone here that could take hold of the call? I got technical support on the line. I'm going to try to talk with them because I'm having a really hard time tonight. Terry? Anybody?
Nobody's on. All
right, well. All right, I'm just going to have to put everything on pause for a second.
Couldn't find the mute button as quick as I wanted.
All right, well, I'm on with technical support, so I'll be back in a second.
Okay.
Okay, well, I'm finished, basically.
All right, thank you, Crystal.
Okay, you're welcome.
Have a good night.
You too.
Next caller is Constance.
Hello.
Hi, Constance, go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling because my friend Tanya McCash appeared in court on March 29th, last Friday, in Santa Clara County, and Judge Manley asked her if she would go to take a psych eval or take psych meds or both, and she said no, and then he sent her back to jail again, and she currently has a habeas corpus that was filed last Monday or Tuesday in federal appellate court, the Ninth Circuit. Her case number is 19-70728. She's currently at Elmwood Correctional Facility. She's in there with gang members, dangerous criminals, people who, you know, were convicted of crimes and stuff, and she's in there. She has not been convicted of a crime. And, you know, all that stuff. And anyways, I guess right now we're in the process of filing an emergency, like a motion for an emergency hearing to get Judge Manley in Santa Clara County in the Family Mental Health and Drug Court. Okay, she doesn't have a family because he put a no contact order against her daughter, and her two sons graduated because she's missed like 3 years of their life. And she doesn't do drugs. And last time he threw her in August, he released her, but on conditions. And that was do drug tests every Friday and not be able to leave the county. Now, she was put in on March 1st on her birthday, and I was on your call a few weeks ago and mentioned that. And I know you guys helped her file a habeas corpus to the federal court, which was Judge Phyllis Hamilton rejected it and said she hasn't exhausted all her options or something with the state court, and then they threw her in jail on March 1st. And so anyways, this is where it stands, is she has a federal appellate habeas corpus. She has a federal appeal on the habeas corpus that you guys helped her file that Phyllis rejected.
Let me just pipe in here. Hopefully, can you understand me? Am I breaking up badly? Or am I
doing good? Good. Good now.
Right, by the way, I just got off with technical assistance. They said that they're having problems. They had problems last week. They got problems tonight. And they're working on it. And it'll be fixed when it's fixed, I guess, is what they said. So, all right, anyway, going back to who's this, Constance?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, what we need to do, I think we have to follow up with some more paperwork on that, but if someone could do an affidavit on that rejection, on specifically what it is, or is that something he gave in writing? Is it something in the court record, or is it something that he just said and you don't have a court record of it?
No, okay, so the problem is when Tanya's been going through all this legal mess, she's given various documents to various people, but not one person has all the documents. Supposedly, 2 weeks ago, Ms. Fuller from Phyllis Hamilton's, the federal court, was going to send me a bunch of information. I have been unable to get into my computer. I'm a targeted individual, and my perpetrators hack in. But anyways, and I'm going to try again to get into my computer to get to the file that Lynn Fuller sent me. She said it'll give a lot of information. It gives the appellate information, her appellate case, as well as...
Yeah, but you see, the problem is they're going to continue to go forward no matter what. Even the appellate process will continue to go forward because they're going through a process that they claim they have control over her. And, you know, how they can potentially or possibly in any way reject a habeas corpus is beyond me. And it was written properly, and what I need is an affidavit from somebody to give me the names of the people. If there's a judge that rejected it, then that's the guy we need to send paperwork. I don't recall whether we did a default on this or not, but I'll have to go look through the record to see what we did do. And if we didn't do the default, we'll push the default through also. And maybe we did the default. I don't remember. But there's other papers we can file after this and try to pressure it. But in this particular case, for the judge to respond, this is the federal judge that says that they didn't go through all of the necessary, hoops to jump through on the low end?
And I think it's the 17th District Federal Court that she didn't exhaust all her options or whatever.
It's not exhausting anything. This is common law, and, they're not used to this, of course, but there's nothing to exhaust here. They're violating her right of due process. I believe that's what we wrote up on that. And the only people that can make a decision on that is the federal court. You know, this is their territory. This is their jurisdiction. Anything under the Constitution, as it says in the Constitution, is their jurisdiction. And so anytime a unalienable right is violated, they need to be coming down. They're the ones to hear the habeas corpus. They're the ones to come down and say, hey, let's get due process here. What do you have against this person? And they have to produce the evidence. And if they can't, and they only got 3 days to do that, that's the way it's been codified. And that's how powerful the habeas corpus was meant to be.
Since she rejected it, I think in late February, early March, is it too late for you to still do something regarding that? I mean, she did appeal.
So that habeas corpus stands. That habeas corpus stands, and that judge is in jeopardy. He's broke the law himself. He knows what the law is. He's a federal judge, and he can read, okay? You can't read these paperwork and think that it's something other than what it is. It is clear what it is. And it is a clear move for what's called cause, CAUSE. And we laid out that cause, which is the quote, the Constitution on where the violation is. In this particular case, of course, it is a constitutional violation that deals with our unalienable right of due process. And I'm sure we got some other things in there, but I don't remember in particular. I have to go look at it. But there's no mistaking the paperwork. They're just clearly don't. Usually they're just silent. Usually they just push it away, try to hide it, whatever. But to actually come out and say something like that, it's really it's very strange.
Yeah, no, she definitely got something in writing, and I think Tanya emailed it to me. Because, and it said something she didn't, or maybe she sent me she tried to get it to Phyllis Hamilton a few times in the federal court. But the latest one, she did indicate that it's being remanded back to Santa Clara. Before she had a letter remanding it back, Phyllis remanded it back to Alex.
Well, that's what I'd like to get a hold of, is that paper.
Okay, so I have to get a hold of. I'll get a hold of all. Try to get a hold of all these papers and get them to you. But she does have a federal.
Get a hold of the papers. Get it to Jan, and make sure Jan's got a contact number if we have to contact you.
Okay.
But if I can get that paper, that would be really good because then I'd know. You know, we'd probably work right off that paper. We don't need an affidavit talking about this. It would be written right on the paper from the court. And
okay,
then
what court is talking about?
This is a habeas corpus. Are you serious? You know, habeas corpus is an emergency. 3 days for a person to have to eat weight.
Appellate court, case 19-70728. I talked to a federal attorney at the federal appellate, the Ninth Circuit, and I asked, can a motion be submitted for an emergency hearing to get this other judge to cease and desist, release her from jail without conditions until the federal, and she said she can't give legal advice, a motion can be submitted, and then a federal attorney will look it over
and decide. Yeah, mm-hmm. let me tell you. You know, the federal court is the most guilty of all the courts, in my opinion, at this point, because of all the dealings we've had with these people, and we see the games that they're playing and the money that they extort. Extort money. I mean, if you're an individual trying to open up a case in the federal courts, they ask for an exuberant amount of money to be put down, lawyers do, in order to start a case. And so you have to be rich to go into federal courts, unless you could do your own paper. Then of course they play the other game, trying to throw you out because they really don't want to deal with, us people. But here's the bottom line. Since its inception, since its beginning, we're going back many, many hundreds of years ago. Okay, when habeas corpus was eventually codified, it was codified here in the United States, but. It was codified years ago, and before America was even. And it's been codified here in this nation. I forget what title it's codified under. Might be. I wonder what title that would be even under. I don't even remember. But in any event, I know we got it written up in our paperwork. But habeas corpus is an emergency process. And 3 days is too long to wait for an emergency process to take place, because if you're sitting in jail, 3 days is a long time. And when they ignore it, they're just damaging the individuals more. In my opinion, they become part of the problem and part of that they need to assist the individual in restoring them. But anyway, I'll look forward to see what we got in the paperwork.
I have another question. So, if more than one habeas corpus is filed, because you were going to do a habeas corpus blitz and get a ton of people to submit them on her behalf to try to get her released from jail,
that poses a problem too. Okay, remember that. Mm-hmm. If she's got all these things going on, and now they get ours and they get someone else's, and I have no idea who's filing it. Are they lawyers? First of all, a lawyer will never file a habeas corpus. So who's filing these habeas corpuses? Can you get me copies of those? Because they could be taking hours and just, when hours come in, just throw it in the pile and say, oh, this again, and not reading it. Because we're coming in from
the whole that the federal Ninth Circuit accepted was Tanya McCash versus Sheriff Lori Smith, the sheriff, because I guess the sheriff or the sheriff's deputies are in the courtroom while they're doing this tour. I mean, no bail, no charges, no conviction, no nothing. And while she's in there, she's been under lockdown for 23 hours a day. She can't go to the library.
She is still in, right?
She's in. He sent her back on last Friday, on the 29th.
Well, what you're telling me right now, again, this even sounds cruel and unusual. To put it down in lockdown 23 hours a day and to go through all these other things, we need an affidavit on that too, because you see, this is the pressure we start beating the judge with. And they need to understand they're going to be held liable for this. And I'm talking about the federal judge, because he or she is ignoring this case, ignoring the paperwork, disobeying the law. Okay, this is, again, like I said, this has been codified. So since it's been codified, it is clear on how they have to respond and how much time they have to respond in. 3 days is it. And at this point, it's not only is defaulted, at this point, she's been damaged more, and we need, as a matter of fact, this judge needs to be added into this whole process as the defendant. And I don't know if she did a countersuit. It sounds like she did.
No, not yet, not yet. She plans to file a claim with the county as well as go for restitution at, you know, at some point. But her father is, she's Canadian, Sylvanian. She's not a United States citizen. She's been out here on a green card.
She's got every right. If her feet are standing in this country, she's got every right than you and I have.
Her father is in California only for 2 more weeks. She really wants to see him before he leaves for Canada because she can't even leave the county without permission. And because she has this offense hanging out, violating a protective order for 2.5 years. What about right to a speedy trial? What about innocent until proven guilty? What about when I called the Hall of Justice 2 weeks ago, Kelly at Judge Hamilton's office said the judge can do whatever he wants to do. I said, really? Even if he's violating her constitutional rights, even if he doesn't have jurisdiction, she repeated herself. And then I called the DA. Santiago at the DA said the same thing. The judge can do whatever he wants to do. I mean, these people are like robots. You know, the judge can do whatever he wants to do.
Well,
regardless.
Just in the years that I've been dealing with this. Hold on a minute. Gerard, I see you back. Are you hearing things okay now? Gerard? You're probably muted.
You're sounding pretty good, John.
So far, I just got in.
Okay. Well, it's sounding terrible to me, but let's see what happens. We'll continue to go.
Sounds pretty good right now.
All right. Well, let me continue on with the call here. All right. Well, look, just in the years that we have been involved in the courts, and I'm trying to think when we started to get involved in the courts. You know, I think it was we started this, 2013, and we may have been in the courts maybe 2 years before that, you know, fumbling around with the committee man thing and doing other things. But as far as coming from the perspective of where we are today, I think it was 2013 when we started this. And they have become more and more emboldened. They have become more and more disconnected from concern of even to think that they might be held responsible or liable for their criminal activities. It's like, that's never going to happen to me. It just goes more and more. I've seen it getting worse and worse. And then there's the pressure, of course, coming in on the other side that they're just maybe not even aware of. And, you know, with the deep state being drained in the swamp, the swamp being drained out there, you know, it's like they're totally oblivious to what's going on in Washington, that they don't understand soon they're going to have no place to hide. You know, right now they got protection. But as soon as that deep state finally falls and the big arrests start to happen, their protection's going to be gone. And I can't believe that these people don't see this yet. Instead, they're getting bolder.
Yeah, we've done numerous web radio broadcasts. Last night we did one with Romola D. I think she has thousands of followers. That was Romola's second radio show, web radio thing for Tanya. And courtroomwatch.com, Eric's website. You know, she files her CUSIP information in February 18th or 19th. To Drug Manley's court, showing that she has a CUSIP number and it's being traded on Wall Street for billions of dollars. So they have an incentive. There's multiple reasons why they have incentives to keep this case going. And he's trying to point her to prescription drugs, mental health drugs, you know, and the California pension invest in their pensions in large pharma. So, you know, as he's pushing drugs from the bench, prescription drugs from the bench, his pension, and she heard from somebody in jail that he's retiring this year. I don't know if that's true. She also met another girl who was in his court, and the girl got a DUI, and she said, you know, she'll accept whatever punishment, you know, they want to give her. And he's forcing her to get a driver's license, and she's refusing because she crashed the car and doesn't want to drive. And he's forcing that girl to get a license. It's just, this judge is out of control. you know, and he's
they all
a
are. They all are. Every one of them, especially now. This level, is this a town level or just the state level, the county level?
Superior Court transferred it to Family Mental Drug Court.
Oh,
my goodness.
She
doesn't have a family, doesn't do drugs, and she doesn't have
heard
mental
of such issues. That's how sick these people are. They have the drug courts. I mean, that's pretty sick.
In May or June of last year, I've been on your call a few times mentioning, but anyways, he said, he declared that she was incompetent due to her legal strategy. She had a lawsuit, and she was the plaintiff, and he was the defendant. And a U.S. attorney, responded on his behalf saying he has immunity. And she had so many days to respond. She could not respond because last August he threw her in jail. She couldn't do anything.
Let's do this because I'm having a really hard time hearing you. Look, get me the papers that you can, okay?
Okay.
I definitely would like to get something written down. It's got to be either something that is the court order that this is the way things are done, or someone has to do an affidavit. And if it's secondhand information as an affidavit, you're being told by, you know, the individual that this is the case, and you're writing it up as what's called the next friend, it's good. It's valid. But we want to get the affidavit to say the conditions that she is being held under. Okay, here the judge is calling her sick, and he's trying to get her all drugged up. He thinks that's what she needs to, you know, needs to be done. Meanwhile, he puts her in jail. Okay, not in a hospital. If she's sick, she should be in a hospital. She shouldn't be in jail. And she's in lockdown. You say 23 hours a day.
Yes, and she's had headaches and an ear infection. She said she doesn't know.
We need all of this in an affidavit, okay? And I can only, you know, I am really, really tied up. But in this case, yeah, I will find the time to do it as soon as I have the paperwork to do it, okay?
Okay.
But I need
All right, I'm going to try again to sign on to my computer tonight. I'm connected with an Ethernet cord, and it says I don't have an Internet connection, and I have to go to my computer and find the file that they install that blocks
When you can do that, get it all together. You know, it doesn't have to be tonight, tomorrow, whatever, but get it all together. But what I need is this. I need the paper where the judge and all the information of the court, the federal court, the judge, whoever made the decision to say, well, you got to go back there and discuss it first. I want that information because that's where we're going to send it to. And also, we want to know the abuse that she's having to go through in jail. Now, the affidavit we have originally, I presume it explains a lot of these details as far as, you know, what she's been arrested for, why she's in jail. And I think this is a contempt one, isn't it?
No. This goes back to October 30th. There was a protective order issued by her ex-husband and his attorney. She wasn't served,
yeah.
And October 31st,
yeah,
when she went to the daughter's school to say good morning to her, principal chased off the property. She went to the police. They put her in ankle shackles, handcuffs.
All of this because of her husband. But wasn't her husband, isn't he connected somehow?
They owned a multi-million-dollar business that makes robotic parts, like Intuitive Surgical and the big guy.
Doesn't have a political or judicial connection, correct?
Yeah, and his attorney is David Luca, and David Luca's father is Dennis Luca. Dennis Luca was chief of internal affairs or something in San Jose, California. So, this goes far and deep. If you listen to Romola D on YouTube or, you know, her channel, I went into some other stuff because Tanya, you know, she has implants in her. She's a victim of non-consensual human experimentation.
Okay.
David Luca, somebody hacked into her email and they obtained her HSCADA scan and entered it into the financial divorce court. That's her private medical information that she paid thousands of dollars to find out she's been implanted against her consent and knowledge.
All right, well, look, you're breaking up pretty bad. I'm getting most of it. I'm getting choppy here at the same time. But again, you know, those are the papers we need. Okay. And I can't do anything till I get that information. Make sure that you leave a contact number. I'm going to write the number I got down that you're calling in on. Is that your normal contact number?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I'll write that down right now anyway. But get a hold of Jan, and with this information, he'll get it to me, and then I'll go through it, and maybe I'll give you a call, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, and it costs me $30 to $50 a day to take her calls from jail. Every time she calls me, they'll and they take 10% off the top, so if I put in $55,
yeah, write that
gone.
Down, too. Get that down, too.
Yeah.
Because that is the biggest rip-off in the world. These people are coming in. There were companies tapping in and putting a meter on the phone and making this huge amount of money. These people are poor to begin with. They're in jail. They have to depend on that people on the outside. Phone calls. Today, phone calls are free. We make them all over the place. We're on Skype. We're for free. Even our phones, I mean, you get one price, and that's it. It's for free. There should be no cost for people to be able to call home from prison. That whole thing is another ripoff.
It's probably $1,000, no lie.
Oh, and yes, because they charge a lot per minute, and then you know, it's ridiculous. They're just, it really, you know, this is so evil what they're doing, you know? All right, well, we'll see what we can do, okay?
Okay, all right, thanks.
All right. Gerard, can you take this, and I'll sit around for a while, see if I get clearer, because I can't understand half of what's going on. I may even try to reboot again.
Yeah, it's still garbage, but I'll give it a whirl.
All right, well, if I rebooting, I don't even know what to do anymore, because I just can't understand half of what's going on. All right, well, we'll see where we go.
Okay. Okay, it looks like the next caller is Robert. I don't know what Robert that is. We have two or three Roberts. You got the mic, Robert. Go ahead. I hope you can hear me.
Trying to unmute. Am I unmuted?
You are now.
Trying to unmute?
No, you got it. You're unmuted.
Okay. Thanks. This is Robert in Michigan. How you doing, Gerard?
Good, good. Good to hear from you.
I've been monkeying around a little bit with some of this stuff, and I was into a little discussion the other day in a private law deal, and so I wrote this. It says, so here is the question of the day. This question will be asked in all caps because it is a corporate, law, question. If the common law grand jury was to be brought back and reactivated, at what point would that be? Remembering that after that point, all court records are null and void as repugnant to the Constitution for the United States of America, 1787-89. Some of the points in the treaties and the whatever I wrote down was the first 1783 Treaty of Paris, second 1792 Corporate Constitution, third Jay Treaty of 1795, let's see here, fourth the 1871 illegal legislation by Congress, President Grant, and the Supreme Court of the United States. And then I had another one here, number five. I can't find it. I know I had one more. Anyhow, a lot of people didn't get it, but where I went to was the fourth, because It was, this is the act that created it in 1871. That is why when the changeover comes, we will be going back to the Republic of 1870. The Constitution of 1870 only had 13 amendments at that time, with the 13th Amendment being the original 13th Amendment, or John Amendment. There will be no 14th Amendment, which is what is used for anchor babies and restores our Bill of Rights removed in the slaughterhouse cases. No 16th Amendment, so no income tax. No 17th Amendment, that changed the appointment of senators by the state legislators, guaranteed states' rights to general election of senators and representatives are by general election for the people's rights. This will be restoring the checks and balances between the state's rights and the sovereign's rights, just as reinstating the original 13th Amendment. This allows lawyers to hold public office, restores the checks and balances to the three branches of government, executive, legislation, and judicial. Because having lawyers, i.e. people, from the same organization or, in parentheses, club, can collude to guarantee that certain acts or legislation will be enacted and survive. Act of 1871. It goes and it gets pretty in depth. What changed everything was the slaughterhouse cases, for one thing. And with the constitutional authority to do so, Congress creates.
Where is this information coming from, Robert?
I pulled this out of, just a minute. I got it out of, Wikipedia.
Okay. Well, look at, you know, all of these cases and all of these acts of Congress that it's subversion, as you know. It's as if it's null and void. It's as if it never passed. The fact that
Correct.
They removed the original 13th Amendment and took the 14th Amendment and broke it in two to make a 13th Amendment and a 14th Amendment out of one, again, fraud, again, a crime, and again, null and void. As far as the law is concerned today, you know, look at Donald Trump is making a clear point, okay? And he's made these points. First of all, he's made a couple of points on who we the people are, that we are the sovereigns, okay? And we have government by consent. Now, I don't know if he understands how that can possibly be. Of course, we do. And we need to get that information out and get people to get involved to take control of their government. Because as long as the people do not take control of their government, we'll continue to have this problem. It's not going away. No matter what Trump does, if the people don't take a hold of this problem, it's not going to go away. It's not going to get fixed in the courts, and it'll return. It'll just be here back. It'll be back tomorrow. Because the system is set up for some crook to come in or another, you know, group of mafia to come in and take control. It just would be a matter of time. But in any event, all of this is null and void. It's irrelevant. Now, what we have going for us right now is timing. And we've always been, I've always felt that we've been right on time as we've been moving. It's just things happen to be working out for us. And the fact that we're getting ready to file the next paper, which is dealing with all of these different, cases that they claim change things or where these judges make these silly, stupid decisions that they think that they can change the laws and ignore the law and so on, and just continue on their destructive mode. You know, we are at a point, though, that this can be taken back. The opportunity is at its best point, because as soon as, and we see now the arrests are going to be following very soon. Anybody that's following what's going on, the narrative has changed. The enemy is on the run. They don't have the narrative no more. They have no place to hide. And they're being barraged by everyone, Congress, the Senate, you know, and many, many others, you know, many people getting on the TV and really going down hard on these people. And they have no defense, and they have no place to hide. So we know that it's close. It is very, very close. And we're pretty close to having our case together. We're still a month away, probably, and could be 2 months. But, you know, we're still moving forward with the case, and the timing looks like it's going to be about right. Now, Trump says that people are sovereign. He says this in numerous places. He said it twice, I believe, at the United Nations, and he said it on speeches. And he's not interested in half the law. He wants the rule of law back. And if he wants the rule of law back, that's what we want. And the law is the law. The 13th Amendment is the law of the land. And anybody who has it, that is a bar attorney that has Esquire after their name, those people need to resign immediately. And if they don't, we'll give them a period of time. Well, at that point, they cease to be decision. They cease to be a citizen. That's what the Constitution says. They cease to be a citizen. And once they cease to be a citizen of the United States, they can't hold any office. And it also says that they can't hold an office of trust. So they have to. We can kick them out. We can impeach them. We can't impeach them, but we can indict them. The legislators should be impeaching them, but they have no backbone. State legislators won't do it in their own states. I've never even heard of a judge being impeached. And in the federal level, they have no backbone, that's for sure. They're not going to impeach. So we, the people, the Declaration, we made it clear, we have a right to adjust these things. If they're not going to fix it, we will fix it. We'll fix it through indictments. We will indict every judge. Now, we will do it, providing we have the money to do it. You know, we need to write papers and file them on every judge. There's a lot of judges out there. There's 94 federal district courts, okay? But, you know, in order to go after 94 federal district courts, each one of those courts, I don't know, maybe has a dozen judges? I don't even know. So if they got a dozen judges, so let's say 10 times 94, that's 900 and some odd judges. So we're looking over 1,000 judges here. You know, how can we, you know, we don't have that kind of money to be able to file that kind of paperwork. Maybe we could do it in a lump way, you know, put all the names together, one for each federal district, and we only have to file 94 papers. But we'll see how we do that. But the thing is this, okay, here is what they have done. It is inescapable that they could possibly even try to defend this in any way, shape, or form, in my opinion. And that is that the United States Supreme Court, we're talking about the federal district courts also, but their boss is the responsible one. They're the top dog. They're the ones that have to answer to this. We have notified the United States Supreme Court on at least two occasions, and I believe more than that, that there is subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic. And they have done nothing. They have done, and the Constitution itself requires, well, actually, the Constitution gives the authority to write the law, and in the statutes, it requires that the judge do something about this. That if you see subversion, you, as just one of the people, have a duty to report this to the president or some judge. Okay? So here we've done that. And what is the big problem? The big problem is a court of record. They have concealed courts of record. They have concealed, you know, common law courts, natural law courts. And who's responsible for that? It goes right back to the United States Supreme Court. They're the overseers of this whole thing, and they haven't fixed it. They are hearing cases that the federal district courts are hearing that they shouldn't be hearing, and yet they're ruling on those hearings, instead of calling them null and void, that they didn't have the power, the authority, the jurisdiction to hear or deal with those cases. And they haven't done that either. And just about every federal case, at least in the last 40 or 50 years, is really unlawful. I mean, that's a problem we can't even fix. It's like you think about that problem. Just think the amount of time and money and effort that would have to go in to deal with every single person. First of all, any federal court case, and this is a problem too, because some of these people are guilty. But you know what? Every federal court case, every criminal federal court case is really null and void. It's unlawful. That means that all these cases have to be reheard again. You know, how do you deal with that kind of a problem? I have no idea how they're going to deal with that kind of a problem, but that's the reality. They have screwed up our system so severe, so bad. There are so many people that are unlawfully in prisons, both in the federal prisons and local prisons and state prisons, everywhere, all over the place. And again, all these cases are unlawful. They all operated under fraud outside of the realm of natural law, and they had to have this quasi-fictional system set up that combines statutes and not unalienable rights, but civil rights. Listen to that word. When people say civil rights, you should cringe, because civil rights are statutory rights. Those are the rights that they gave, that they think that they can give you or bless you with or whatever. The whole system is a major problem. So all of that, really, it comes right back down to going after them for one major thing, and that is concealment of natural law courts in America. They've been concealed everywhere. I haven't seen one in New York State. We've tried to file many of them. I see no access way to file one. I haven't seen one filed in the federal courts. I see no access way. They've locked the doors. They've actually sheetrocked over the doors, taped them, and painted them, and you don't even know they're there because they hid them. They concealed that court. You cannot get access into that court. Of course, we're going to attempt to do that, and we will do that, and they may ignore us. But they can only ignore us so far, and it depends on what Trump is going to do, because he eventually will have to deal with this case at some point in time. He's very much aware of it and of what we're doing, and I don't know how much involvement, but he's aware of what we're doing, and he's going to get a copy of this case when we file it, and it's going to put him kind of on the block too, to some degree, that he's going to have to do something with it. So, but on the other hand, we want to be careful not to move too prematurely either. Because we can't push on him if we're premature. That affects his plans because, again, a lot of people are impatient. They want to see the arrest sooner. They want everything done right away, you know, and that's how we've been trained to live our lives. You know, we've got tweeting and everything's immediate pleasure. We expect everything to happen right away. But, you know, these things take time. And everything is – timing is everything. So you can't do something until it's ready to go. But I think the timing is right. It's coming up on us, and we are working to meet that with the necessary paperwork to be ready. And I think, again, hopefully in the next month or so, we'll be ready with the paperwork, and then we'll be focusing in on when we're going to file it. But go ahead, now, Robert.
Are you aware of the February 20th of this year decision that came out of the Supreme Court?
Well, what decision did they come up with?
Supreme Court condemns out-of-control civil forfeiture laws. And it goes on. Civil forfeiture laws. Meaning?
Yeah, I'm not getting...
The illegal seizure of property. Any form.
And they
right,
stop you.
I'm missing too many words. Try it all over again. By the way, have I been breaking up?
Asset forfeiture, John. They go in and stop you on the highway. If you have some money, they take it.
Federal courts are stopping that?
State, yeah, they ruled against local. it, unanimous.
A unanimous ruling against it so that they can't seize that no more?
That's correct.
Okay, well, that's good. They finally made a good move.
I'll send you guys a copy of it.
You know, these people, look at, we all knew it was evil. We all knew that they were breaking the law. They claim that they can't see it, and now you have a ruling that's unanimous. I think that makes it clear that they knew they were breaking the law. It's all about money, money for the town, money for the county, money for, you know, all of the different federal agencies, I mean, political agencies. All right, anyway, let me get off the mic. Go right ahead back.
Well, that's okay. You covered a lot of it, and the party, I'm pretty sure, John, you're aware of who some of us have been working with here in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, what I just was mentioning was brought to that party's attention a couple of weeks ago. And the response was, he's got a meeting coming up with some interesting people. I don't want to say too much because I just don't want anything exposed at this point. I do talk to Jan and Gerard and a few others. They are well aware of where things are. And as far as the timing, I would say that 1 month is not too bad of a place to place it. Meaning, we've already discussed in the group the common law administrator, the common law grand jury, the sheriff, how it should be handled. A couple of us have wrote papers on the procedure of the sheriff calling the common law grand jury and several other things that apply to it that you and we at NLA have covered. And that, I think maybe You might want to shorten it up to 3 weeks, because
we're not necessarily governed by, you know, just trying to figure out what timing for us. Our timing is governed by our ability to get the paperwork done, and that's where right now. Right now we've got, goodness, let me go take a look. You know, we've got our memorandums up there at National Liberty Alliance.
Right.
And it should be under... Yeah, is it that many? Okay. Let me go over action against the judiciary under the grand jury. So if you go there, you count them. You're counting 12? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Well, I count 11. But I think there's one I was going to upload today, and I didn't get back to it, so we probably have 12 up there. We have about 30 memorandums, and we could even have more, but right now we're planning on about 30. So we've got 12 or so done. I got two more that are ready to really be popped up there shortly, or at least one more. So we got 12 done, another, I don't know, maybe 15 or 20, roughly. And so... it takes time to write these memorandums. You know, there's a lot of research and making sure we have all of the sources of all the points that we put down there. Everything we've got in our memorandums is crystal, crystal clear. And it is documented. This is, we document all the sources from where this comes. It is the law of the land. The conclusion that we come to on each one of these memorandums cannot be argued, okay? There is no argument. It is not a moot. These are not moot situations. They are absolutes, and we will be using also we're going to refer back. My plan is to go back to all these memorandums and also refer back into the discussions for the Federalist Papers, because all of these issues really have been discussed. When you go into each individual, as far as the Bill of Rights is concerned, you're really moving over into the Anti-Federalist Papers, which I really haven't been able to read through yet. But I just got to find the time to do that, or even just sit back and listen to the tapes, because we do have that on audio also. Anybody who wants to listen to them being read out, you can listen to them. But look at these conclusions, you can't argue with them. And when we lay this all out, we then have to, of course, work on the paper, which I'm working on the paper at the same time we're writing memorandums, because ideas come up or certain things you uncover and say, well, I want to deal with this situation right in the main action itself, which is going to be a very unique, extraordinary action. Very, very unique. Very, very extraordinary. But we have every right in the world to do it. And we're going to lay out how it is that we have the authority and the right. Again, cannot be argued. They can deny all they want, but they're just denying. If they deny, it's only because they're denying the truth, and they know the truth. But, you know, you deny something enough times, people hear it, and then they believe the wrong side, unfortunately, because people don't do their own homework. In certain areas, we have to do our own homework, and this is one of them. You know, anything that has to do with your future, anything political, anything judicial, and most importantly, anything spiritual, those three issues particularly, you can't trust other people's words. You can't trust other people saying, well, this is the way it is, and that's the way it is. No, you have to find out for yourself. Now, one of the things that we've done here and continue to do, the book is being written with huge numbers of sources. Everything we write in there, you could trace it right back. We give you all the information to do that. This court case, these memorandums, same thing. We have huge numbers of sources in there, and where we got our information from, you could trace every single point, every single statement back to its original place. And we overwhelm it. We actually go overboard. Because we can make these points from many, many different positions. And so, that's how we have to, well, that's how we do it. So that being the case, anybody reading our stuff, any of our literature, any of our memorandums, any of our cases, the book that we're writing, even the course, well, the course, we don't have a lot of, I don't think we put it on the footnotes in the course. I'm pretty sure we don't. But the book, we'll have all of the necessary footnotes. We'll give all the sources. So people can actually check out the research very quickly and find out that these are accurate statements, and the conclusions can't be debated. You can't argue them. So it's a solid case. And so writing this up and getting it done, that's what's going to take the time. As a matter of fact, we probably would have filed it already if we had it done, but we don't have it done, and I'm glad we didn't have it done, and I'm glad we didn't file it yet, because I think the timing is coming right around the corner here, and we'll see how it works, you know. Lord willing, our ability to file this paper will be at the right time that it should be filed. We can hope that, and I think it very well may be. But anyway, go ahead.
I think you're correct, John. I think the time is fastly approaching. As you well know, Trump was up in Grand Rapids last week, and he mentioned sovereign two times. He also mentioned citizen several times. And judging from what went on and the reaction, I would say that yes, in the area you're talking about, but I myself, I would like to see things kept in to common law, meaning the Constitution, everything from Magna Carta on up through the amendments and through the 13th, excluding the 14th through the 19th, because that was bar pressure on our Congress, who did what they shouldn't have done.
Well, I would have agreed with you a little while ago. The 14th Amendment is definitely a good amendment, which should be combined to today's 13th Amendment. They should be one. They should be number 14. And the original 13 should be back in place. And that's what we're going to push for, and we're going to require and demand. And look, it, we're also going after the Justice Department on this to back us up, and we're going after Trump to back us up. We'll go after the Judiciary Committees on the Senate and the Congress to back us up. And all we need is one of them to back us up. And I do believe that the president is in a position that would do it, and we'll see what happens. But the 14th Amendment actually is, you know, it's really the repentance necessary that America needs for slavery, if I recall, on the 14th Amendment. Freedom of the slaves, the 13th Amendment, and then the certain rights and so on for the 14th Amendment. Now, unfortunately, the 14th Amendment, they have this idea, and they wrote it up to focus in on civil rights, okay? That's where the problem is, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. Because, look, I don't think they use the word civil, but they use the word citizen, which is to refer to the word civil. At least that's what I hear in all of the talk, and I see how they played words or word games with that word citizen. I'm careful not to use the word citizen in court, but there's nothing wrong with that word citizens. We are citizens. But we're, you know, look, at we're citizens that consent to our government on everything. But the 15th Amendment, okay, the 16th Amendment is a problem. The 15th Amendment, I don't particularly remember. I have to go back and look, but if I recall, that was a necessity also. The slavery repentance, going back to that on the 14th Amendment, we had to correct the Constitution. You know, we've got things in there that is problematic to, allowing slavery back way when, you know. So we do have to make that correction. We do have to make that repentance, and we've done it. Even though they've done it with a trick, it still was done nevertheless. Now, the 16th Amendment absolutely is a major problem, null and void. 17th Amendment, null and void. Neither two of those amendments could possibly stand up because they don't stand up to the Constitution. The nuts and bolts of the Constitution, the foundation of the Constitution rejects those two things, a balance of power and slavery on by tax. And it outright rejects it. So, but anyway, some of these, you know, and I'm reviewing every one of these right now because I want to reconsider, and I have never really looked deep into the amendments going up from, let's say above the 17th Amendment. I haven't really looked much into those amendments above that. And I think, what do we go up to, 26 or 20? I think it's 27, is it? 27 amendments, I think? I think that's what the number is. But in any event, we have to carry ourselves back to the conversation. When I read these things and I read other people's comments on it and thoughts and ideas, I get one impression. And at first glance, I've been agreeing with these people in some of these things. But now that I'm revisiting, and I'm revisiting the argument, and that's the key, the debate that took place during these amendments, okay? That's where you got to carry yourself back to, as Jefferson said, and follow the debate, and then you'll understand. So I think a lot of these things will probably end up being okay. Obviously there was a problem trying to make that alcohol illegal, and then they had to go back and bring that back out with another amendment. That was problematic. And it just shows you the enemy's working behind the scenes within our government. So
you're correct. There's 27.
27. Yeah, I thought there was 27. So anyway, we got to look at these very carefully. So when we're doing it's going to be in a course, our conclusions and looking into the debate on the 14th Amendment particularly. There is no recorded debate that I could find on the 13th Amendment. So they've even erased the debate if they had one. They probably didn't. I'm sure. I'll tell you what, they probably did. But I can't find it. It's been taken out of history, and we wouldn't even know that the 14th Amendment, the 13th Amendment was actually risen. I think it was in 1818 or 1819, somewhere around there. You know, we wouldn't even know about that if it wasn't for the remnants on the records throughout the states. And it's in quite a few places. So there's a lot of references to this original 13th Amendment put out forth back in the early 1800s. But not that we need the debate, but it sure would help if we could find a debate. I haven't been able to find it. Anybody else can go looking for it, and if they find it, let me know. Maybe it's buried somewhere. Maybe it's on a microfiche somewhere, and it's got leaked out into the electronic world, you know. But if we can find it, it would be really helpful.
So you still, I think at one time you were looking at the point that all the counties have been unified. So if that is the case, then if one county manages to reverse things and reinstall the common law through a grand jury called by a sheriff, then that would apply to every county in the United States as unified, correct?
Well, no, because you wouldn't get the local courts, you wouldn't get the state courts in all the states to recognize this, and even the state court within that court, within that state, let's say, maybe if they kind of recognize in one place, I doubt they'd recognize it in another place. Look, this is something the people have got to do, and we looked at this quite some time ago. Our original plan was to do this in New York State, and then we thought if we could do this in New York State, it would be used as an example across the nation. And, of course, you know, we ended up going national, and as we went national, we started to shift our focus away from the state and into the federal, because the main thing is this. If you win the case on a federal level, and take total control back of the courts, the people take control of their natural law courts, which is the way it's supposed to be. No judges allowed, no statutes allowed, no regulations, no codes. None of these things are allowed, period, okay? And judges don't come into the court, and they're not to come in there and to make any statement concerning law or anything. This is not their business. This is the people's court. The people are the jurists. They're the judge. That's the tribunal. And it's the people. The people, if it's a criminal thing, there was the people who indicted. In any event, as long as it's a court of record, then it is the people who rule on this. They hear the case, they make a decision, they make a ruling, and it's over. And that's hard for these people to swallow because they've been in control so long. They've been brainwashed so deeply. They think that common law is a federal district court rulings. That's what they think common law is. How more ridiculous and you know, destructive can you really get? Federal one federal court to another federal court, they can't even agree with anything. And everything is done for their own consumption, for their own purpose, so it benefits them. You know, they maintain the status quo that they're supporting, whatever that might be, wherever that might be. But that's why, you know, and again, really thought that we really needed to stay away from going after the United States Supreme Court, hopefully using them as a nine jurist that might also from the state level or the federal level, however you want to call it, kind of would confer and agree with our conclusions in a case. But every time I looked at this, every time we wrote any kind of things on this positioning, on, you know, who we're going after, why we're going after, why we have to, we ended up back with the United States Supreme Court. They're the pinnacle, you know. Look, if you get a person, let's say a commissioner, and they're not doing their job, and the commissioner was appointed, okay, well, who's really the responsible one? You go to the person who appointed them. Why? Because the person who appointed them is the pinnacle of that structure. They are the elected individual that had the job to make certain appointments, and they appointed that individual for that particular situation, you know, federal agency or whatever the case may be. Okay? So who's responsible? It is the person who was elected. Well, when you go to the judiciary, okay, and you're going to go after them, who's responsible? The United States Supreme Court knows it all. They know They are hearing and ruling on subject matters they have no business ruling on. They know that. And they should. If they don't, they should. Shame on them if they don't. They know that that the federal district courts is conning every person who walks through their doors. They know that every single federal district court, there's 94 districts, many courts within a district, but 94 federal districts, and every single one of them has closed the doors and concealed access into natural law courts. They have concealed it. They deny it. You, even if you bring it up, they ignore it. No matter what you do with your paperwork, they continue down their process in an equity process as if they are God, the rule, and the boss over the people. And the United States Supreme Court knows it. There's no way they can't know it. Now, I can accept the fact that they've had a gun to their head and the enemy's in the camp, but you can't make that excuse no more. It's time for you to stand up with Trump and the rest of the patriots and to start doing the right thing now, because if they don't do the right thing now, we have to indict them. And I probably should say we need to bring them up for indictment, you know, because we don't know. It makes me sick to my stomach when I hear these people say, well, we're going to go get an indictment. No, you're going to beg the people for an indictment. You're not going to go get an indictment. Look at this guy that they arrested, and all of a sudden the court, the attorney had this whole thing thrown out, the whole case.
Over in Chicago.
Yeah, and you know, the police force is not happy with that. I heard that they released information immediately when that was thrown out of court. Now, wait a second. If the people spoke and the people indicted, show me where in this Constitution we've given anyone authority to overshadow that, to reverse that. Where did they get the power and the authority to reverse that? Where did they get the power and authority to try to make a deal with anyone who has been indicted? We spoke. They're indicted. Stop the nonsense. It's over. But they do it anyway. And who's responsible for all this? The United States Supreme Court, they're the supreme. Why? Because it says so in the Constitution. And they're responsible. This is their jurisdiction. And they're responsible to make sure that our Bill of Rights is protected, and they are not protecting it. They are responsible to make sure that the Constitution is obeyed, and they're not being responsible to do that either. So, you know, everything is riding on this case. The timing, I think, is perfect. Hopefully our case will be perfect enough to make the point clear. And now the key thing is this. We realize all we have to do is win this one case. Then we walk into every state and take over. Any state that refuses the people to take control of their business, take them right into the federal court. And we will do that in any state that rejects the access of the people through the grant, as being the common law grant. There will be no battle in the state court other than a federal battle, and it would be one case, and it would go rather quickly. But first, we have to get the first decision done. And once we get that authority, not that they're giving us the authority, we already got the authority, but the authority appreciated by those that are in control. And again, we're depending on the patriots to have enough knowledge to understand what we're even talking about. You know, because people don't understand a lot of this stuff. They think you need a code officer running after us, watching us, and you know, checking out our behavior and looking for code violations, so that they can make all this money, you know? But anyway.
Yeah, time I is understand where you're at.
It's coming.
Pardon?
It's coming. The time is coming.
Oh, yes. Back to- this group that I'm involved with, they understand very well the Constitution. They understand statutes. There is a couple of guys that really can bring it off the top of their head. And I'm not talking about simple stuff. I'm talking about the more complex stuff. Of course, the more laws or rules they write, why the more complex it gets. It's not like the Bible. It's been around for years and years, and there's very few changes to it. But these jokers in the court system today feel they have to write one right after another, and which they do, because every time they get called up or brought out of the darkness into the light, they've got a problem. So I tend to look at things strictly by the Constitution. I don't pay much attention to statutes. I don't pay any attention. I try to stay away from the federal statutes, all USCs, and stay right in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights or the amendments. And that's where I lie with this whole thing.
Well, just bear in mind, you do have to at least understand the boundaries and appreciate the purpose and the meaning and the lawfulness of the titles, okay? There are 56 titles, I believe, and, there are some that are not lawful, though. USC 26, I have no idea what they're even talking about. They don't even know. And it appears that, all of these statutes and everything, the way they're written in the law and all this stuff, and they've got, you always got the, and then the rulings that they take place in some of these federal district courts, and even I'm sure in some of the appellate levels on the federal district, they become problematic, and then they get used and abused to abuse us more. I forget where I was heading with this, but I lost my train of thought, so I forget where I was heading with it. All right, anyway, what else? We should move on. I know we got another caller, and I see Brent is here. Brent, are you going to pick up the mic in a few? We'll pass it over to you in a few minutes.
Well, thank you, John.
All right, thanks, Robert. All right, let's take we got one other caller in the queue. We'll take that caller, and then we'll see if Brent wants to take the mic. It's an 843 number. Go right ahead, 843.
John, are you hearing me?
I'm hearing.
Okay, this is Dan out of Carolinas, and I hope what I'm going to say, I'm going to try to be very precise and to the point as best I can, because each of us has to be mindful there's some other parties that are still to speak, and we have to be productive here. So in our sessions every night, and boy, if anybody didn't hear something worthwhile staying on the lines and hearing your response back to Mr. Roberts, I didn't catch his name precisely. I hope I apologize for that. But anyway, and then to the other lady that's with a case ongoing out in California, I hope this will help. We sovereigns have got to quit acquiescing to this criminal defunct law that is on our lands and answer only from a Christian standpoint. And this would stop a lot of people that calls in each and every night if they only knew that they are contributing. That means me. I've seen this over and over with paperwork coming to me. And on the face of the paperwork, whether it comes in a mailbox or delivered by a sheriff, it clearly is not you. It's under a scheme. It's all capital letters, or it's a mixture of some abbreviations, which is not clearly what is on your birth certificate. And every person should be armed with their birth certificate. I don't know whether everybody knows, but back in time, about March the 9th, 1933, from there onward, that birth certificate, in a consensus standpoint, was factored in what we have over now, about $22 trillion million. Every child that's born, the powers to be where these lawyers got involved with loans and some of our former presidents and so forth. I'm not going to go all into that, but this thing is being never resolved. And because we can keep on with a debt that's in a fictional, on a fictional footing from the very get-go. And it's taken our newborn, and now they claim it's about $650,000 that they claim that that newborn child is factored in. And then they use that to that cease approximately about 11 conglomerate families, and one of which is come out boldly and says, I think it's not too long ago that he controls, I believe it's a Rothschild, a spokesman, says he controls the cash flow in America. Well, that's a big, big problem because it's an economic problem. But let me tie this back in to what I really wanted to say to everybody here, and that calls in nightly. The nom de guerre, that's N-O-M space day, GUR, G-U-E-R-E, is one, if you look it up in Black's Law or any kind of dictionaries, you're going to understand it's a warlike name. And these courts have declared, this is what the Nuremberg, everybody needs to learn what the Nuremberg trial was all about, are declaring a war with a type of paper printed out purporting to be you, that sovereign, when in fact, they've got you predicated as slave on the plantation. And so those people that volunteer under threats, duress, and coercion, this is a means to get redress of grievances and when someone is bullying you around, even in a court run, with guns and paperwork and ink and threatening them, putting them in jail and all this kind of stuff. Nevertheless, most of us are violent. The sad part is until we hear Mr. John and Jan and George and Mr. Roberts and various others speak enough on here and get ammunition to understand how we can abate that process, or if we show up in a courtroom being commanded by the paperwork, we stay out of the bar. And we ask the judge where the bar is and that we are not understanding the nature of this paperwork and that clearly this does not apply to you. And shut the you-know-what up. Do not go no further in participating with that court. Do not volunteer anything. And when it comes down to it, other than the fact, if you bring me, Mr. Solicitor, correctly who I are, paperwork from a Christian standpoint of who I am lawfully, then I'm compelled from a Christian to respond or be a respondent to whatever paperwork or whatever issues are. Then there's other ways, of course, what is called an abatement is a process. I don't have time. I'm trying to respect here other people that need to speak, but I hope a little bit of this meat here and there each and every time, every Monday night, can start sinking in. And for people to understand, this is very simple. You're a Christian if you are declaring to be a sovereign. You cannot be a sovereign unless you are recognizing a higher power that gave you the right to be classified or be a sovereign. And then it comes down to unalienable rights. And then it comes down to all the things that Mr. John and George and Mr. Roberts and various others are trying to educate us on. And I really learned a lot. I learned a lot tonight. Thank you. Go ahead.
I appreciate that. I agree with most of what you said. And matter of fact, I agree almost with pretty much everything you said, except for I think, maybe I can offer a couple of corrections here.
Okay.
It goes beyond Christianity. Why? Because the Bible is, the declaration is clear. All men are created equal, and all are accepted. Now, if you go into our Bibles, we read about Jacob, and, Jacob, is it Jacob? No, I don't think it's Jacob. Yeah, it was Jacob. Jacob's name was changed to Israel, okay? Prior to that, he represented the people, but it was the fleshly people. And he became he represented the spiritual when his name was changed to Israel. And remember, when God removed, when God took, you know, the Jews out of Egypt, one of the first messages that that they came to Pharaoh with was, Israel is my son. Let my son Israel go. Okay, that's a very important statement, okay, because the body of Christ is Israel. It's the true church of God. You know, you don't find the true church of God necessarily down on the street corner here, that brick or stone building or whatever. You know, maybe one or two people in there, maybe 100 people in there are part of the body of Christ and part of the true church. And then you go to another church and there's people outside the church. Collectively, we make up the body of Christ. But God speaks about giving his blessings not only to Israel, but also to Jacob. And then he even goes further than that and talks about even to those who cleave onto Jacob. In other words, Jacob is representing the fleshly that has not come to salvation and maybe is in process of moving to salvation. And Israel, of course, is representative of the true body of Christ that has come to salvation. But those who cleave to Jacob is coming from the fleshly perspective and is receiving the same blessings that Israel is receiving and Jacob is receiving, because they want to live with them. Why? Because they see the judgment or the righteousness. If you go back into the history, you'll see there are a lot of people that decided to live with the Jews because they saw they had something there. And if they wanted to live, they were accepted. And this is why Christianity is one of the greatest religions, because we accept everyone. You want to be an atheist and you want to cleave on to Jacob? We're all for you. And ultimately, you know, what that really means is that you're in agreement with what it is that we've got. And in this case, from the political realms, trying to bring God back into the court. Maybe they don't believe that a God is there, but they believe in the principles or the conclusions. That's good enough. They can participate. They can even become elected. So from that standpoint, we can't reject anyone. Now, moving into one other point that I'd like to make, remember, if you play in their sandbox in any way, in other words, and I did this mistake when last time I went into federal court and I refused to go to the bar. I wouldn't cross the bar. If I had to do over, I'd cross the bar today. Because, you see, all I did was give them some credibility. I gave them authority. I gave them some power. I acknowledge that they have something there. No, I walk past the bar because they ain't got nothing. And if you make your case, and you could do it subtly, everything that takes place in the court, anything that comes up, you can very subtly make a point. That judge will see it if you make that point, but you put it in writing. You know, Bill Thornton made that point. Try not to say much of anything in the court. Put everything in writing. You know, I object. What do you object to? I'm not too sure, but I object to that, and I'll get back to you in writing. I'll write a paper on it. And that's what I did in the federal court. I went campaigning back with a paper, you know. But I realize now we're acknowledging that they have some power over us. We're acknowledging and accepting that fact by not going past the bar or by, you know, being too concerned with capital letters. I couldn't care less whether they got caps or not. It doesn't mean anything to me. They ain't going to bring it up, and I'm not going to bring it up. And if they did bring it up, we're going to make a fool out of them. And we'll go through and lay it out where it is that it's subversion, that it's a fraud. You're deceiving the people. Look, you can't take someone into a court and hold them in a jurisdiction that they don't belong. And it doesn't matter when you discover that that jurisdiction is wrong. You could be 10 years in jail and discover that jurisdiction was wrong, and you can object to it and potentially beat it. At least in righteousness, you could do that. In the courts today, of course, maybe a whole different story. But in righteousness, you can build a case. You've been prosecuted and beat up on by things that are unlawful, that are a fraud. When they hide something, if they claim that you're in a contract because your names are in caps, well, without a meeting of the minds, there was no contract. Okay? Didn't exist. Doesn't exist. If you're not part of the meetings of minds, it doesn't exist. Now, of course, as far as us, some people will say the Constitution is a contract. We discussed that a couple of weeks ago or last week, and we're going to discuss it again in the future. You know, we'll get more deeper into that point concerning that, because I've heard that before, too, and I even bought into that for a little while. But when I started to research on that, no, the Constitution doesn't say it's a contract. The Constitution says that it's the law of the land. That's what the Constitution says. And the federal government wasn't there, wasn't in existence to be met with for the meeting of the mind. We didn't negotiate anything with the federal government. The states negotiated amongst themselves. The people of the state negotiated amongst themselves. How much power do we want to give them? How much? What are we going to write to prevent them from doing this? Are we going to give them this power? Maybe we shouldn't give them that authority. You know, we came up with the Constitution. Federal government was not there for the purpose of being able to debate or argue that point. They were not there for negotiating. There was no meeting of the minds. It's a job, and they're being paid to do that job. And when they break the rules, they break the laws, the regulations, the codes, or whatever, they're going to be held liable according to those codes. And if it's criminal, they maybe even pay a higher price, depending on what the jury wants to say, because they can go beyond it, or they can ignore the codes, because any criminal case, they could do that in. So that's my one thing I'd like to say to you, is that we shouldn't give them too much benefit of their power by going into their sandbox, acknowledging their caps, acknowledging their bar, or any of that stuff. Ignore it. That's my position. And then just keep on point of the case. Keep it as much, well, not as much, well, as much as you can. Keep the case focused in on the law, the rights of the people, the Constitution, and make your points and move on. And you could destroy every position or every thought or every idea they come up with. You can destroy it with history. I've always had faith in that, and there's nothing, no position I've seen that we couldn't defend and bring it back to righteousness. It always is defendable. If they've done evil, we just hit it back with good and make it right. Okay, with that, I'd like to move over to, you got a closing point you want to make or anything before we move?
I just wanted to say real quickly, when it comes down to who you are, the caption of that case is everything. And if it is in all caps, then I'm going to have an objection to it. I don't know about other people. I heard what you said. But I cannot represent to some paperwork that has to be with a third illegal twins purporting to be me, because when I write
Here's how you correct that, though. When you respond back to their paperwork and take back control of the court by countersuing them and maybe even moving it to federal court for cause or whatever you do, you put it on properly. And you've made the point that you've done it and put it on properly, but you don't have to debate it, you don't have to argue, you don't have to explain that. They know what you're doing. They'll kind of understand that, probably, that what you've done there. We do have to be very careful not to give them any credibility. Okay,
well,
because the whole thing is a fraud. They all belong in jail.
I don't want to do that, but just to understand that a lot of people has no clue of how they claim they're getting jurisdiction over an individual. It's through adhesion contracts. They need to learn about that. I'm not going to take the time out here, but I would like to mention something very brief in regard to the lady that's got the situation, and really brief. If after everything that you put in a memo out to the lady concerning the one that's being held unlawfully out in California, with affidavits and everything else taken in consideration, if timely so, the Ninth Circuit Court does not bring the paper back within timely situations, clearly I hope that lady that's, I don't know where she's from, maybe Connecticut, I'm not sure, but in closing, should realize this is a violation of due process law if it's not, like you spelled out, should be done in 3 days or less. And then one other thing that could help this lady, and that is she or someone could help her put in an appeal when she finds out the judge's order, whatever it was, is holding her to start with, and write an appeal with affidavits in support of her motion to for a trial by jury, and the jury determine the law, and that there's tribal issues before the court is no question, and that's fraud before the court. And if it's $20, she has the right to under, if it's I know you know this, Seventh Amendment jury trial in their court, or if it's some kind of criminal situation under the Sixth Amendment. If it's over $20, she has, either case, she has a right to trial by jury, and that might get her
relief. You're absolutely right. We agree. They should yield. There was a time when they would have yielded to that, but they don't seem to even want to yield to that. If you listen to, I don't know if you hear early enough, Crystal, she already went through that process, and they denied it. Okay, they did. She said, "I am the grand. I am the trial jury." That's what the judge said to her. Okay, and that right there is a crime, in my opinion. And he has seized control of her and her home and her assets and her future, everything, even her health, because it puts her through a lot of stress. And so he's responsible for all that. But you see, unless you can get a court, which is going to be a huge problem. Unless you can get a court where you can step up and say, listen, anything the judge had to tell you about the law, you don't have to listen to. You can make your own decision, your own mind. And by the way, don't let this guy up here make the decision on what the penalty is going to be. We're looking for restitution here. You have to decide what that restitution should be. And if you think that maybe you should go beyond that with some other kind of penalty, that's up to you. You people have to decide that, speaking to the jury. Okay, of course, no judge is going to allow you to get that far. Because he's already spoiled the jury. He's already told them the lie about the law. If you're in a court and statutes are being applied against you, you're in the wrong court. You know, you want to make an accusation, a criminal accusation, that's fine. Make that criminal accusation, get that affidavit, and let's look at it and see how we can rebut it or whatever the case may be. But if they're bringing up code violation this and regulation, well, they don't do regulations, but they do the codes and they do the statutes, and they bring it up to the people, this code, this statute, this, that. Well, I'm above that. You can't hold me responsible or liable to those things. That has nothing to do with me. That has to do with you. That's for bureaucrats. That's for corporations. Those are for the entities that are not alive, okay? I'm a human being, and I go under natural law. Statutes have no effect on me. That is the point of liberty, free from government control. And when government can make statutes and codes to control your behavior, they control you. And they will continue to take more and more control, more and more. It'll never end. It'll just give them one little piece to come in on. Give them, let's allow them to have traffic tickets. Let's just allow them to have traffic tickets. Believe me, it's going to grow from there. It will not stay there. And they'll keep taking inch by inch by inch until we're back to where we started from, right here today. And that's the problem we have. So we have to hold up the truth, make our battle, but to think that we're going to get a real, in these courts, okay, a real court of record where the jury is untainted, where the grand jury was untainted, if it's a criminal case, we're in dreamland, and I don't think it's, you know, I'm sure somewhere maybe we can find it, but I don't see it anywhere here in New York, that's for sure.
I think you're right.
Okay, let us move on. We appreciate it. Gerard, are you still here? You got the controls here? I'm going to move over to Brent, give him some time. It's running late. Gerard? All right, well, let me move over to Brent. Brent, you ready to go?
Yes.
Okay, all right, we're going to move over to Brent. Brent Winters. Brent Winters is going to talk with us for a while. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent?
Thank you. And thanks again for allowing me to say a few words. I've been reading the local rules of the Federal Circuit Court, and I discovered, at least in one, they discourage the use of capital letters with people that file briefs in the court. And this is new. I go back and read them periodically. I'm involved in the case. I went back and read them again, and that's what I discovered. And I've concluded that I don't know everything about it, but it seems clear to me that capital letters in legal documents are the result of typewriters. Once typewriters came along, capital letters became possible and a style developed of capital words. And you say, well, that still is something that's used against us. Well, maybe, but now that, of course, we've made the transition to laptops and apples. And when we do that, all of the habits we had with typewriters that were unavoidable, such as fully capital letters, we now don't have to do. But lawyers that file briefs in court still, some of them, there's a few that still follow the habits of typewriters when they file briefs that they draft on their laptop computers. For instance, they still underline the names of the cases instead of italicizing them. Why? Well, because there was no italics letters on old typewriters, unless you changed the ball on electric typewriter, but a lot of people learn to type without electric typewriters that are practicing law still. And so they're used to all capital letters on underlining, and also they're used to two spaces between sentences. Well, that didn't apply to the word processing you do on your laptop. And I know a lot of people, I know young people that still put two spaces between the sentences, and that's not appropriate on a computer. We don't have to do it anymore. The only reason we do it is sheerly out of habit. And the only reason that legal papers that I see still capitalize letters is purely out of habit, and at least one federal circuit is tired of it. And frankly, I'm tired of it too. You cannot read all capital letters as readily and as easily and grasp as quickly what it's saying as you can just regular type. And all the studies that a fellow can read about such things come to the same conclusion. So that's why they want to get rid of capital letters, because in the titles or in the text. And that's not to say that there is not some nefarious significance attached to capital letters. I'm not convinced there is, but some people are convinced of it, and they say they have evidence of it. And I've said before, I'll just repeat it here again, if somebody can show me a law or a state court case or a federal court case, an opinion, or a statute or a regulation that says that, then there's some validity to it. But if there's nothing on the books that says that anywhere that anybody knows about, then I say there's no validity to it. Now, I did have one fellow refer me to Black's Law Dictionary, and a friend, and he's very studious. And I went to Black's, and we went to it together. Matter of fact, it was during our Law of Promises class, and I looked at it, and I did see there that it says that there is such a style that uses capital letters. There is, but it didn't say that there was a law that governed the use of capital letters. There is a convention, a custom that has gone with it, as I say, and my conviction is it came with the typewriter. Whether or not some people misuse it to indicate things that are unlawful, that's another question. But I was glad to see the federal court in their local rule say we discourage the use of all capital letters for words or phrases. I'd pass that along for what it's worth. Maybe it will stimulate more discussion on the subject. Well, the comments I make here, of course, are my own, and my opinions are my own and are not to be applied to anybody else that participates in these calls. We're going through the Declaration of 76. We went through that. Now we're starting into the Constitution of the United States and going through it clause by clause and blow by blow. We've come to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16 says this: the Congress shall have the power to provide for the organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. Notice there, that may be employed in the service of the United States. They also may be employed in the service of any of the sovereign states, the state where the militia is, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of officers. and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. Now, we have a division of labor here concerning the militia of the several separate states of the Union. The authority for training the militia is according to a discipline prescribed by Congress. That's the Congress of the United States. That means the Congress of the United States has authority. The Constitution delegates it to them to draw up the training manual for the training of the militia, whatever training they think is necessary that will be uniform, the same training for all militiamen in all of the states of the Union. They're to draw it up. That's the only power they have. Just draw it up. That's it. But it's up to the states here to appoint officers. The federal government, the Congress, the president, the courts of the United States have no authority. The Constitution grants no authority for them to appoint officers of the militia of the state of Georgia, New Jersey, Montana, California. No, that's the states. They have that power. The president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, was offered a commission as a militia officer in his home state. He was offered that commission by the ranking general of the United States Army. Well, the ranking general of the United States Army is not an officer of his home state or anybody's state. He's an officer of the general government, Washington, D.C. And Jefferson Davis turned it down and told him why. He said, you don't have the authority to appoint officers of the militia of any state, not mine, and I don't accept on that basis. Well, that's the simple kind of thing that we all need to be willing to do, but we can't be willing to do it if we don't know the rules. He knew something about the Constitution. He wasn't going to participate in an unlawful act, even if he could have got away with it and had the prestige of being the general officer of the militia of his own state. He was qualified for it. He was a graduate of West Point. But he knew better. Well, also, of course, Congress has the power to set this discipline, which means to provide for the organizing. What does that mean? That means that Congress can pass a statute that provides for the organizing of the militia of each one of the states. Congress has not done that for many, many decades. It's their responsibility to do it. That means the law demands they must do it, but they're not doing it. Americans have never amended this militia clause, and its straightforward meaning gives the right understanding. And we want to stress again, the National Guard units are not the militia. And by the term militia, the American colonials signified both the militia having yet to answer any call to muster and the separate militia of the several states having answered the call to muster. Now, here's a key point. According to our Constitution, according to our common law, as it informs our Constitution, that the point where the militiaman musters, at that point, when he shows up and falls in for duty, having been subpoenaed, called, at that point, he becomes under the martial law, not the law of the land, but under the martial law, whatever that martial law is that the Congress of the United States has drafted up. I would imagine they would say, well, you fall under the Uniform Code of Military Justice because that's the code that Congress has drafted up for all of the armed forces of the United States. It's been in place for many decades now. The militia in colonial America, says the Supreme Court of the United States, consist of a subset, it says, of the people. Now, I believe they're dead wrong on that point in this respect. It's not a subset of the people. No, it is the people, period. They call it a subset. And this is in a recent case in 2008. The militia, they said, consisted, they're not talking in the present tense, of a subset of the people, male, they said, able-bodied, they said, and within a certain age range. Although the militia, says the Supreme Court, consists today of all able-bodied men. it does not say, the Supreme Court correctly says, it does not include women. Why is that? Well, even in our own day until very recently, we had enough sense to not try to send our daughters and our wives to face shrapnel and ugly bullets. And to repeat what I say often, only a nation of cowards would do that. Are we a nation of cowards? It certainly appears that way. And it's not that the gals won't rise to the occasion. They will. They're loyal, and they're patriotic, and they will allow themselves to kill, be killed, and blown up and maimed if men ask them to do it. That doesn't mean it should be done. It's ugly enough that anybody has to do it. It's just sickening to think what goes on. Well, if they're called forth, says the Supreme Court, to a local place to meet a local threat, that's the militia, D.C. versus Heller, 554, U.S. 570. I would encourage everyone to go to the Internet and read that case. That was the first case the Supreme Court faced the question of whether the Second Amendment it protects a personal right to carry a loaded gun or to have one in your home more particularly, but to carry a loaded gun, is it a personal right or does it have to be attached to the membership of a militia? And the Supreme Court said, no, it doesn't have to be attached to a membership of the militia. Every man has a personal right to keep, this was about Washington, D.C., in this case, keep a loaded pistol in your house. And it didn't say you didn't have the right to carry it, but it discusses all those things, goes into great detail. That's U.S. or D.C. versus Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R, 554 U.S. 570 from 2008. Our Constitution of the United States allots concurrent authority over the militia of each of the separate states with Congress. In other words, the Congress has the power, or the president, rather, Congress has the power to set forth the discipline of the militia in writing. The president has the power to call out the militia, all of it, of all the states, or any particular state, or any particular states, or any part of it. He has the authority under the Constitution to do that under certain constraints. We talked about that last week. But also the governor has a concurrent authority, concurrent. That means at the same time. And whoever calls out the militia first, whether the governor of his state or the president, well, that person, that man, has command of the militia until further notice. So it depends upon, by analogy, we remember, or we should be able to remember, recall, learn in history that during race trouble in Little Rock, Arkansas, by analogy, this is not the militia. It had to do with the National Guard, but the same principle was true there. President Eisenhower did not want the governor of Arkansas to call out the National Guard and use the National Guard contrary to what he wanted. So he quickly, very quickly, made the call to the National Guard of Arkansas, and then they were obliged to obey his orders and not the governor of Arkansas. But it would just depend on who got there first. And Eisenhower was prudent enough to get there first, and so he did what he wanted to do with the National Guard. Well, the same thing is true of the militia. It is a service of concurrent authority. The militia gives the general government no authority. The general government, that's the government in Washington, D.C., give them no authority to provide arms and equipment and ammunition or to even pay any militiamen until the president has duly summoned that militiaman, until he has summoned him, until he has answered the summons, and until he has mustered in. Once those three things have happened, he musters in, then the government has authority to provide arms, ammunition, uniforms, whatever they want to do, or none at all, or just some of them. That's the important point in time. And Justice Story in his commentaries takes the same position. And that's from our common law and the way our common law has operated for centuries, respecting the militia going clear back to the Ferd Fair of the Anglo-Danes in England. The Militia Act of 1792 was Congress's first legislation on this matter. I'm going to read a clause out of that. The Militia Act of 1792, made pursuant to these clauses of our Constitution, Congress passed this legislation, says this. It's dated. You'll listen to the language. You'll know why I say that. Every free, able-bodied, white, male citizen of the respective states resident therein who is or shall be of age 18 years and under the age of 45 years, under 45, shall be enrolled in the militia and shall within 6 months thereafter provide himself with a good musket or firelock. And there are other things that are said, but notice it stresses you must be a freeman. And not everybody in America in those days was a freeman. And what does that mean? Well, it kind of meant in that day, too, you're white. Now, whatever that means, recognizing that there's really nobody white except an albino, we're all different shades of color. That's kind of funny the way we talk about it. But the principles thereof, leaving that part of it out, the principles thereof are drawn from the common law. This could the part about the freeman and the white male, that's not part of the common law, because slavery has never been lawful in common law, and slavery was never, ever lawful on the island of Britain. Never. Justice Manfield did an extensive search back in the Somerset case in 1776. A slave from Virginia, was there. Long story, but the bottom line is slavery has never been lawful in England. The slave trade has been lawful in the British Empire, though, but not in England. And because we were part of the empire, the Brits, the people in England, said the common law didn't apply here. Therefore, slavery was lawful. And anything the king, the emperor, here wanted to let you do, if he wanted to let you have a firearm, he would. If he didn't, he wouldn't. Because he was the law, they said. The common law doesn't apply. That's why we went to war with England and separated for that reason. But the fly in the ointment has always been this crazy idea called slavery. Crazy, destructive idea. And we see it, well, even up until Truman's presidency. There was a segregation among the troops. And so this is not something that is in our ancient past. It's something that has existed within my memory of what used to go on. Well, later, that was the Militia Act of 1792. Later, Congress had a Militia Act. Congress passed another one of 1903. And they were trying to make this militia thing work. Truth is, our federal government, our general government, has never figured out. It's not that complicated. But they got too many people with creative ideas. That's the problem with lawyers, judges. That's the problem with legislators. That's the problem with most people. I don't want to pin it on them. Most people think they're pretty smart at some point, and they think they can outthink other people, and they think that they can think in a creative way that applies to the Constitution. That's not true. The Constitution is law, and it's not a matter of creativity to change it. No, don't do that. It's a matter of being open-minded how to apply it. But no, you don't change it. And the Militia Act of 1903, the Dick Act as it is called, is not constitutional. Never was. It was just from a man named Dick. He thought he had it figured out. He was going to be creative. And it said that the common law militia is always in one of two postures: an unorganized militia embracing all able-bodied males between 17 and 45, except armed forces regulars, certain officials, and others per 10 U.S.C. Section 311. And that's the unorganized militia. Then they said there's the organized militia. That's what the act said, which is the unorganized militia called out and mustered. Well, our Constitution makes no such distinction, and our common law makes no such distinction, organized versus unorganized. You see, that's why the Second Amendment says a regular militia, or a well-regulated militia, which means regulated means regular, a regular militia, just like the regular army. Men in the military talk about the regular army and the regular Navy. I'm regular Navy. That's what a sailor would say to a naval reservist. He's not regular Navy. Regular Navy is real regular. Those guys are at sea all the time, ready to go to war. That's regular Navy. Well, that's because they're always ready. See, the militiamen of our early existence, the militiamen were called Minutemen. Why were they called Minutemen? Because they were always ready. Always ready. Had their musket or their firearm loaded right by the door with all of their ammunition bag hanging there so they could grab it as they ran out. They were Johnny on the spot, ready, regular. Regular was the idea of the militia. If the militia is not regular, if it's not quick to fall in to meet a threat, it's not doing its job. If you got to wait for the army to show up, that'll be a while. If you got to wait for a police officer to show up or a sheriff's deputy, it's too late. And the militia was supposed to be ready at a moment's notice. That's the whole idea of it, and that's why we have it, and that's why it's so important. If we had this one thing in place as our four constitutions militia clauses defined it, we would actually we would go a long ways to solving a lot of our problems, because we suffer now under the hand of what could be called the police state. You wouldn't even need armed police. It would take away all use of them if the militia were ready, regular, as the Second Amendment puts. Well, this thing with the Dick Act came after the Spanish-American War, and they thought, well, we can find a better way to make it, ensure our national defense. The Constitution presumes operation of the common law requirement. The Constitution always presumes the operation of the requirements of the common law. And if you don't even know them, if Americans don't know them, people in government don't know the requirements of the common law, the Constitution just a dry and dispirited skeleton of words. And doesn't have any meaning at all, because it doesn't. It does not expound anything. It doesn't explain what you're supposed to do. It just throws it out there. It is a brief of common law government. You must know something of the common law to get it to kick in for you, and the parts to fall together. It's dry bones. It needs life breathed into it. And the common law is the life that breathed spirit into our Constitution of the United States. It makes us stand up and walk. Well, when our Constitution was accepted, when it was ratified, the militia of each state was ever ready, regular. And this clause leaves the organizing to each state, but transfers to Congress authority to provide rules governing how the states are to go about the task. Congress legislates concerning the militia, and the states execute. Congress has no power to make the states do it, because remember, and I'll end with this, the Sheriff Mack case, called Pierce and Mack, one from Montana, one from New Mexico, went to the Supreme Court, and Justice Scalia said in that case that the government of the United States in Washington, D.C. has no authority to commandeer, keyword commandeer, any employee of state government, period. That opinion is buried and ignored. Let me repeat that part again. No employee of the United States government has any authority to commandeer any employee of state government of the several states. Well, thank you, John, and thank you all for listening. And back to Gerard, if you're there.
Okay, I guess Gerard's not here. Okay. All right, thanks a lot, Brent. Appreciate it. I guess we'll take our next caller. Let's see, Dan, you've been unmuted already, 843. Did we talk to you already?
Yes, sir.
Talking to you from the Carolinas, yes, okay.
Yes, sir, right. You did.
We'll take our next caller. Thanks, Dan. Okay, let's go to Charles in New Jersey. You got the mic, Charles.
Oh, no, wait, star 6?
You got it. We hear you now.
Oh, okay, John.
Yep.
I wanted to ask you something. Isn't it kind of naive to think that the state should not control our behavior? Because, like it is said, man's heart is evil. And I looked at a specific example in Seattle, Washington. That state is being overrun by drug addicts and homeless, and the city is collapsing, and the police are not allowed to enforce any of the laws. So I was wondering.
Well, I think that there's a problem with them being potentially an alien, probably an illegal alien. Is that the case with the laws, or the problem with the laws? Because I'm sure people like you and me, you go out there, they'll slap a statue on us in a second.
Oh, I'm not sure what the rate of illegals, but they said 100% of them are drug addicts.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, your thinking is that we should have some rules that we need to be held accountable to? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, and who's going to write those rules?
Society.
Well, who's society? What if I'm not paying attention?
Well, I have no answer then. What would be your answer?
Very simple, common law. If there is an injury, then there's a case. It could be a criminal case. It could be a case that's not criminal, okay? If someone injures you, okay, in some way, shape, or form, and you go file a paper and you can hold that person accountable. Let's say it's a criminal act, okay? And that is the other problem. I mean, these, let's take traffic violations. Traffic violations, it's not a criminal.
John, I understand how common law works in the case of a victim. Where there is no victim, there is no crime.
Right.
But I saw in what's going on over in Seattle are drugs. People are drug
addicts.
But
what does that have to do with anything? If they're not enforcing the law, you don't need a law to tell you that people are, you know, selling things or doing things that are unlawful and are damaging. Now, let's just take drugs. If drugs were lawful, and again, this is not a good conversation to have because, well, we'll talk about it anyway. Let's say drugs were lawful. Well, then you wouldn't have people selling drugs. You wouldn't have people dealing drugs. Why? Because you can get it a lot cheaper by going down to the local, maybe the liquor store sells the marijuana or whatever drug it is that you want to take. And if you're over a certain age and you're responsible, then you do it. You may be using it for medicinal purposes. You may be using it for recreation. That's none of the government's business. And I wouldn't suggest anyone putting a needle in their arm or something like that. But again, who is the government to stop you from doing that? We are responsible for our own behavior. But let's go back to just people in society. When I get off the mic, I'm going to see if I can't find this. And if I can't find it, I'm going to find it anyway for next call because this has come up a couple of times, and I want to refer people back to a video. I think it's called The Road to Nowhere. And they had a situation where you looked at the statistics in a particular town. They looked at the statistics of a certain area, very busy, a lot of traffic, especially around early morning or later in the day, people going to work or coming home from work and school and all that stuff. And they discovered that everything moves very slow. There's always a lockup, takes forever to get through town. And they had a certain amount of accidents that took place at traffic lights in different places, along that road. Now, they performed an experiment. They talked to the people in the town about the experiment that they were going to, set up, was going to be performed. Everybody said, that's crazy. It's not going to work. It's insane. People are going to get killed and this and that and the other thing. What they did is they put covers over all the lights, and they just put up stop signs, okay? Everybody came to a stop sign and yielded to the other. What they found, people after this experiment took place, and I think to this day they still don't have the red lights back anymore. The people were amazed how well and smooth things worked and how everybody at an intersection yield to each other. People crossing the street were being yielded to and everything, and no accident occurred during this time period where normally there might have been some accidents. Now, here's the point. and I realize this myself since I become conscious of this. There's a place that I come out and I'm constantly stopping and waiting, and I'm always looking at the red light. I'm so busy looking to see for the light to turn so people aren't going to honk at me and I want to get going anyway, that I'm paying so much attention on the light, I'm not paying attention on the pedestrian to my right or to my left that's ready to walk in front of my car as I see the light turn green, and I'm ready to punch the, the accelerator. So it is a problem, okay? People yield to each other to begin with. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't need red lights. I can't picture New York City without red, you know, red and green lights. I just can't picture that. But most places, okay?
I saw a video just like that. It was done in England where they removed all the red lights.
I think it was in England. We have that video up on our website. So my point is this.
We're talking about the same thing.
Well, it is. My point is this, though. When it comes to something like traffic infractions and things like that, people aren't going to go 8 miles to a red light when they know traffic is coming the other way if there's a light up there. They're going to stop at the red light. And if it's at 3 o'clock in the morning and you hear the crickets going and there's not a car in sight, well, I'm not going to sit around and wait at a red light anymore. I stop, look around, nobody here, I'm gone. And but if the cop's sitting there, they'll give you a ticket.
Well, I agree with you totally on that.
Let's go to the other problems with this. It's all corruption. I know somebody who got a ticket recently, and it was they were like 45 miles over the speed limit, okay? And they worked out a deal. Why did they work out a deal? They hit him for $300, okay? But why did they work out a deal? Because they want his business back. That's why. It has nothing to do with trying to correct the problem. They know there'll always be someone that's going to go through a light or do something wrong, and it may not have been wrong anyway. Okay, may not have been wrong. The other thing is you get a ticket, maybe you get a fine for $50 or $100, and then the state comes in and takes their piece. They're usually like in New York, I think it's $95. They call it a surcharge. You know, the state's got to get their piece. You know, so you
where
know, if you get
come up with that number,
huh?
$95. How did they come up with that number?
Well, I have no idea.
If you're suing someone, all you
ticket
can collect on is your loss, and it has to be backed up by dollar amounts of your loss. So where did they come up with the number 95?
Well, they just want money. They like money. They want your money. And they want to take as much as they want it, and they want you to come back and give them more as often as you can.
Yeah.
You know? But this is the problem. It's all corrupt to begin with, number one. There's no due process, number two. Everybody, very rare when you see something that doesn't go the right way, but very, very rare. I've seen it once or twice or a couple of times. You know, everyone that walks into that traffic court is going to walk out there a little with a little more debt than they had when they walked in because they're going to lose. Everybody loses. You always lose. The cop works for the government. Okay, the court works for the government. It's all a political animal. The prosecutor works for the government. You haven't got a chance. You're guilty. Now, how does that work?
Bailiff is the deputy.
Huh?
Bailiff is the deputy of the common law, and you have a constitutional sheriff elected. The bailiff.
Let's go back to the point that you were trying to make, that you think we need some rules somewhere. Where do we need rules? Give me an idea. Is it other than traffic? Where do we need rules?
A city full of homeless, drug-addicted, mentally disturbed people.
Well, that's because society is decaying because of what they turned us into. That's because they've demoralized the people. They've demoralized our children. They train our children to be godless to begin with, okay? They take our children in school and they teach them not how to think, but what to think, okay? And then they put all this stuff around us that we have, and we just get lost in all these other things, you know. But in any event, we've been demoralized as a people. When I was younger, okay, young man or a kid, or and even as a young man, okay, abortion? Abortion? Are you kidding me? That was murder. There was nothing to talk about. There was nothing to talk about. Okay, that's how demoralized we'd become. You could find person after person after person after person. Take a mic, go in the street, ask them if they think they have the right to be able to decide for themselves whether they should have an abortion or not. And it's like 99% of the people say, yeah, they should, especially the women, they that's their right. Why? Because they were trained that way. They were taught that way. They don't even know that they're murdering. It's murder. You got to account to that to God. You don't know that it's murder. It doesn't matter. You still got to be accountable for it. You murdered. Okay? So common law, really, basically, is the law, and that's the law we need. You know, we could be creative. I mean, I would put out the idea to people, you know, we get in and start working with the juries, the grand juries, and we start to take control on the grassroots level. One of the things we throw down that way is, you know, how do you deal with certain problems? And maybe people come up with other ideas. They can share them. We can use it here in this state, that county, this county. Let's say you got someone that's driving and they're drunk, okay? And, you know, you have someone, an officer of the law, and they see that person swaying down the streets or something. They stop him. Are you okay? You know, maybe he's having a heart attack or something, or you know, maybe something's wrong. Or maybe they're stoned out of their mind. And you discover, well, this person's stoned out of their mind. Well, look at that officer of the law can't let that person continue driving. People are in danger. So what do you do? Well, I suggest that you take the keys, you have the vehicle towed at the owner's expense. You'll have to take the owner, you know, the person home, drop them off somewhere. And then you take the keys and you drop it off to court for the grand jury. So the next grand jury session that comes in, he's going to have to go talk to the grand jury. What are the people going to do about it? Well, I know if I was in that responsible area and I was on the grand jury that was given the keys to, my thought and idea is this person needs to go through some kind of programming and stuff, and they got to, you know, get back into society the right way. And if they ever do it again, this is what we're going to do to you because you're putting people in jeopardy. You see, you can figure things out. The people can figure things out. We don't need the government to write laws to control our behavior. We are well equipped to doing that. But, you know, as Jefferson said, I'd rather be bothered with too much freedom than not enough. Don't take any of my freedoms. If that person next door to me is not responsible, well, they'll eventually pay for the irresponsibility. Don't come telling me that you're going to control my behavior. I am responsible. And if we teach our children and become a society that is responsible and morally minded, we're going to have a lot less problems. Drug problems totally disappear when you legalize it and control it as a controlled substance. It shouldn't be in the hands of children. They'll no longer be dope pushers in the schoolyards. You know, there's no business in it. A lot of gangs will fall apart because that's what keeps them funded and moving, money. There's a lot of things. But the thing is this. Here is the thing. There are places where, yeah, you know, maybe you have a point, but you can't put me into it. If I don't agree to it, then it has nothing to do with me. Go away from me. Don't bother me. Because when you give government just that one little ability to control one little thing, it'll move to another little thing and another little thing. It'll become a big thing because they won't stop. Government is a fire. That's what George Washington told us. It's like a fire, and it's very dangerous, and it'll burn you, and you can't give it too much power. But we, the people, ordained and established, once we break that rule, that law, that fact, that knowledge, that we, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for you, but we're going to give you a little power to overrule us. You just destroyed your liberty. Because liberty is freedom from government control. Freedom from statutes has nothing to do with us. And if you go in and read the federal statutes, you will find that they all have a jurisdiction. And none of them identifies with courts of records.
Right. So, John, going back to the example you gave me about taking the man's car because of how he was drunk driving. How is that not a violation of the Fifth Amendment?
Well, I don't think you have a choice. You're not taking the man's car. He can have it back. But he's put that person, and who said it was a man? Maybe it was a woman.
Well, that person.
I'm just kidding. But anyway, you can't allow a person to continue under a condition that puts people in jeopardy. That's recklessness. And you can use the word recklessness. And what is the cop doing, or the officer of the law? What is he doing? He's not bringing them into the court, forcing them into a court. He's not forcing. He's taken responsibility. I got to have this vehicle removed from the road. I have to have it towed. I can't drive it. It has to be towed. Yeah. A truck out with insurance to tow it. And wherever it's towed to, that person's responsible to go get it. But I take the keys and I'd say, give it to the grand jury. Who is the grand jury? The grand jury is the people. The people decide. We're back in control again. We do have to stress wrongdoings.
Yeah, that's good. And the officer is not going to leave the man standing on the side of the road in the cold winter.
He's going to have to drive him home. He's going to have him drive him home or something, or to a hotel room if he's traveling through.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, I see it, John, because I have used that example while I was explaining common law to other people. And what I was telling them, it's illegal to have your property seized without due process of law. So
if the cop takes
your car, that's theft. You have a case for a federal lawsuit.
Well, if the people take your car, then it's not theft. And again, it's not the courts. Nobody's involved. The cop's doing his duty, and he's got to move it off the highway or the roadway. So, and he can't drive it, like I said. And it's not that the guy can't get it back. He's got to go pay for the towing and get it back. But he does have to go see the grand jury, to talk to him about his problem and how we're going to fix it. And make an arrangement with this person. Okay, we catch you driving drunk again or this or that or the other thing. This is what's going to happen to you. And that's the end of the game. He gets caught again, and that's what happens to him. The grand jury has worked that out with them in the negotiation. Or if he refuses to work out that negotiation, they can still require certain, exercising that he has to do. But they can also let him know, next time, you come in here and this, we're going to indict you for that, and you can go talk to the trial jury about it. But, because you have to protect society. I mean, it's common sense. We have cars. They didn't have cars way back 200 years ago. But look, they had horse and wagons, and I heard that there was some pretty problems with that too. I don't know if you've ever seen the early pictures going back when the cars were, just becoming populated in the very early 1900s. And watch them drive around New York City and stuff. It's just amazing. No lights up. Just pull off to the left and off to the right. People crossing in the middle of the street.
It was crazy. You have laws.
You have rules. You have you. We can all agree on a busy street in a major city to put up a red light. And if it's not a major place, we can all agree to put up a stop sign. We can all agree to stop at that stop sign. We'll do it.
I hear you. Because people are just naturally look
socialite.
Out for one another.
Yeah, people are naturally
socialite.
It'll work out.
Like the book by Alex de Tocqueville. I don't know if you ever read it. It was all about what is so amazing about America. What is good about America? And Alex de Tocqueville wrote, people naturally understand one another's rights. They don't need an enforcer to stand there at every corner telling them what they should be doing.
Well, again, liberty is all about freedom from government control. When you are king of your world, and as long as your kingdom doesn't injure another person's kingdom, we're all in good shape. But once you injure my kingdom, we're at war, and I'm going to use the courts to deal with you at war. You see, it's all common sense. And look, there are all kinds of people. Some people are nasty. Some people are obnoxious. And there's some people very nice. There's all kinds of people. But even the obnoxious people, even the nasty people, when they're in society and you're moving about, through society, people yield back and forth to each other. Okay? It's very rare that a case where the person is just, obstinate that they just don't care. Generally people are kind in society.
My initial question to you, John, refers to a video. I hope you get a chance to see it, called Seattle, My City is Dying. It's about the police do not enforce any laws. The place is loaded with mentally disturbed drug addicts that are doing heroin, mainlining, and mostly opioids, and they're just like sleeping on the road.
There's one simple way to fix the problem.
What's that?
You got to fix the problem. Do what we're doing. Get control of the courts back into the hands of the people, so we the people administrate to the juries, and get educated where we need to get educated, and you know, try to come up with good ways to deal with problems, like for instance someone driving drunk, but that's how you solve the problem. Even Seattle, the people need to take control to get justice back into their courts, and justice means to go after the wolf and you know, the fox that's guarding the hen house, you know.
I don't know how the problem would fix the problems in Seattle. I don't live there, thank God. I mean, all the way in New Jersey, as far away from that as you can get. But I can see the attraction to the millions of old drug addicts, crystal meth users, and homeless just sleeping.
Well, look at again. The only way I think that's going to be fixed is for the people to get educated and take control. It's up to them. And you know, if we're able to fix everywhere else in America, and we can't fix Seattle, that's Seattle's problem. You know why? Because they're refusing to get educated. They're refusing to take control. But look, the good people will take control. The good people will do the right thing, and they'll bring law and order back. It's because of lawlessness. And you know, as Brent always says, how do you put that, Brent? The solution to lawlessness is the law. I think that's how he put it. So there you go. You use the law. The people got to do it. You know. Anyway, I got two more people. It's 12:07,
okay.
And I'd like to take them on before we close down.
I think you answered my question well enough, John. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, a dialer from Comcast. I had no name on here. VoIP dialer. CLGJ1, Comcast.net, VoIP dialer. You got the mic. Going once, going twice, moving to the next caller. Okay, last caller coming up. We've got Jeff. How you doing, Jeff?
Good, John. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
That's good. Hey, just a couple of comments. First of all, I can't help myself. I mean, we're talking about Seattle and hypocrisy, really. I mean, these people, we're talking about the left, where...
Yeah, it's the worst of the worst.
Well, but I mean, you know, they somehow we have this situation where it's okay for certain people, mostly illegal aliens or people that aren't legitimately here in America, they have rights over everyone else. But as you said, this country was founded on principles that are inviolate, that we can do as we please. You maybe you didn't say it. You touched on it, or, you know.
Take care of our own. Be responsible for our own behavior.
Yeah, I mean, we can do as we please as long as we don't cause harm to anyone else. And,
right.
And you know what?
Don't injure my kingdom.
Right.
That's simple.
And you know, I got to say, John, that I mean, I've had this discussion with several people that don't get that, don't understand what we're talking about. You know, when you start talking about kingdom or the king, they, you know, they laugh and think, you know,
well, it is kind of funny. It's old talk, but the point is made. That's the key.
Well,
and
but
it's all about it's all about ignorance. You know, you got these people
exactly.
Run
that's my point.
Congress, and you're in Congress. You got all these young people now. You got that young woman who's insane with all these ideas, and she doesn't even know how we're going to pay for it, but she wants to do all these crazy things. And they're talking about they don't like the way that we elect our president. They want to go to popular vote. Before you start talking about that, go get educated. Find out why that is like that. Why do we have the system set up that way? Okay? That's the question they have to answer. But they're too dumb to go do that, or they've been trained too well not to go look anything up and to respond, you know, just haphazardly, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I mean... My biggest concern, though, about... Oh, sorry.
What do you eat? Is that a Milky Way?
Close. Very close.
We must get to you.
Sorry.
We must get to you.
I swallow it.
Okay.
You know, if we're driving drunk, I mean, I truly believe, I mean, I've been driving for, 50 years. I don't believe that, and I don't know, I haven't never tested it, but, you know, if who's to say that a 400-pound man, 300-pound man, 300-pound woman can't drive 0.16? I mean, who's to say that? You know,
well, that's
the
not
problem.
The point. I don't think it's so much of that as being out of control. I mean, look, if they don't have these apparatuses in order to discover how much alcohol you have in you, okay, one person might be one little drink and they can't even walk. Another person might be able to take down a few of them.
Well,
the
that's
point
my
is,
point.
If they're driving down the street and they're driving erratically, something is wrong. It's
yes,
the duty of the law enforcement to pull that person over to find out, are you okay? I mean, you know, you're having a heart attack or something? Or you smell the booze and you say, well, this person's got a problem. I mean, if they're out of control, you smell the booze or you see a bottle in there, that's it. It's done. Call the tow truck, take the keys, drive the guy home, and move on.
Hey, but I needed to clarify because move on means, okay, they served and protected. They helped the person out.
Right.
And, you know, and period. I mean, there's no criminal charges.
No,
no,
but
hurt.
The person has to be stopped. We
yes,
have to do something.
Of course.
Okay? And I think the best people to do that, to deal with that problem, is the people. Don't you? Not a judge, not a court, not a statute,
well,
not a regulation,
I mean,
not a code, but the people.
Well, I mean, the regulations, codes, statutes, judges, police have proven that they can't handle it.
That's right.
I mean, they've proven it. They get excited, you know, at the thought of possibly arresting somebody, and that's not their purpose. That's, you know, that's not, you know, they have no authority to do that.
Well, again, look, this is where, in my opinion, we really got to get to. You can have a private police force if that's what you want. You're in a gated community or something like that, and people want to put their money together and move into there and agree to a, you know, a private
sure,
police force. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's their business, okay?
Yeah,
you
yeah,
have to go through a gate to get into that community to begin with, so you know you're getting into something private to begin with. But without other than that, and maybe there's other exclusions here that I just can't think of them. But other than that, okay, in my opinion, the only thing we need is the sheriff, okay? And we don't need and you know what? If you do away with tickets, if you prevent these tickets from going forward, every single one of these town and village courts will close down. All the police departments will disappear. Why? Because they're all being supported by that activity. And
right,
so you'll get rid of all those problems, you get rid of all the code writers, you get rid of all the stupid statutes, you get rid of all these abusive judges who don't know the head from a hole in a wall, and just abuse the people, they don't know the Constitution. Now you're moving to the sheriff, okay? Now, you have to have enough sheriffs, or deputies, shall I say, to take care of business, and they'll figure that out, what that number is. So some of these cops that were cops, they can come work for the sheriff's department, but now they got to learn the law, the real law of the land.
Well,
okay?
We're in New York State, John. We're in New York State. I mean, we're in New York State where the number of troopers has grown. I mean, I don't know. I don't have any stats, but there's a
but
problem
there's no
there
place for them to take their tickets. Don't you look at the state gets a piece of the action in every court. Like
right,
I said, someone, you know, a $50 fine, they still got to pay the $95 fee for the state. The state gets their piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
The surcharge.
Yep.
I think it's $95. I don't
I
know what
it
is exactly.
Yeah.
So it does every time a ticket goes through that courtroom, they get that. Now, if a state trooper brings that case up, they got to have a courtroom to take it to. They're going to get their $95 on that case. The court's going to get their $35, $50, or $300, whatever they put the fine at, they're going to get their piece of the action, their business. Right. But if there's no place to take the people, there's no courts to take them, the whole system falls down, plus the state can't afford to continue all these state troopers. Now, there may be a reason for state troopers on the highways, you know. That sounds sensible.
I don't agree. I mean, to me, that's...
Well, you know, maybe the town can handle it. Yeah. Well, look, not the town. Maybe the sheriff can handle it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But we, the people, set this all up for the sheriff to handle it by county. And so
I agree with you that the state police is a problem because they owe their allegiance to a political animal called the governor. But go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean that is a huge issue. I mean, the governor, I don't even know where it ended up, but the governor at one point, and I don't know the number, was like 20. He was trying to appoint 20 private state troopers. I don't think it ever did fly, but I think it probably will. I mean, eventually. I mean, he was trying to have his own police force, and he was protecting their identities. I mean, that's freaking, you know, communism. That's, you know, that's anti-American. I mean, that's...
Well, look, we can get rid of all this if we just move to getting rid of all of the problems, you know, as far as these tickets. They can't hold them against the people. We apply the law. You can't you control people's, you know, behavior. And again, if you shut these courts down, you shut the business down for both the city, the town, the village, and the state as far as them dealing with, you know, all these code violations.
John,
every single village, every single town, they all have their own police force.
Right.
I don't know if there's any out there that don't.
Well, there may be some. I think some do rely on the sheriff. But do we have any documentation whatsoever that allows, troopers to, you know, have, I don't know, any perception of authority over our sheriffs?
No.
I mean,
the sheriff is top cop.
Well, I mean,
even the FBI or any kind of federal agency that wants to come into town to apply a search warrant or something like that, as far as I'm concerned, they need to go see the sheriff and let him know they're coming into town, and the sheriff should oversee that activity.
But they don't.
He should be sending out one of his deputy. Right, they don't. They need to first of all make sure that the warrant they're coming in with is lawful, that it's got all the necessary, you know, bells and whistles on it.
No one even looks at it.
I understand, but this is what the sheriff should be trained to do. And if you're not there, they have the proper paperwork. Get out of town, boys. Take a hike. Don't come to my county without the proper paperwork. And if they have the proper paperwork, then he should oversee the process.
Well, I mean, I believe that...
Don't break down his door at 3 o'clock in the morning with the SWAT. You know, I mean, it's insane.
it is insane. I believe that someone has to come up with some kind of mechanism, you know, to hold the sheriff accountable because, I mean, I know personally, I even have their cell phone numbers, two local sheriffs, one in my county, one in Albany County. These guys are, their IQ levels are very, very low.
The problem first that we have to hold accountable is the people. This is all, at this point now, it's the people's fault. Why?
Yeah,
because 100%. We have education, we have things we can do now, there's a new day coming, and we can make a lot of changes, but if the people don't step up to work with it, to do it, it's not going to get done. It's your fault. It's not the sheriff anymore. Your sheriff is not educated because you're not educated. If the people were educated, they would demand that the sheriff be educated in the proper areas, of course.
Right.
You know?
But it's a few of us hacking at the branches, though, or the roots, I mean.
Right. We got to get critical mass going. And critical mass doesn't mean we need millions of people.
No.
But critical mass means we need a reasonable number of people behind us moving. And again, a very, very small percentage of a percent is all that we really need. That's what we have to have. And we're counting on having that by the time we file the papers. You know, what really, if people are waiting to react, they're missing the boat here. you don't wait till the last minute, because all of a sudden we take control and now uneducated people are going to take control of the process. What sense does that make? It'll be worse than what it is now. These people don't know what they're doing in the first. Well, they're actually making money out of the game, you know, in the courts today. But
yeah,
look at it. We're going to control the courts. We're going to control, make sure that the process runs properly. This is the people's job. This is how we consent.
It is.
We're going to do that. Then we have to be educated to be able to do that. And if we get that power and authority given to us, and then we don't have the knowledge to be able to exercise it, we have a problem.
Big problem. Absolutely. In my experience, ignorance is certainly a big problem. I mean, people just have no idea. I mean, you try to talk about history and, you know, how
nothing
we got to where we are.
Than, nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. I know
Bill
Thornton says that quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, and he's correct. But anyway, I don't want to, you know, take any more time on this. But
okay.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon, hopefully.
Thank you. All righty.
Take care.
Okay, we got Comcast back. We'll do real quick. It's 22 after, ready to close down. Someone from Comcast.
Yeah, John, it's Gary.
Hey, how you doing, bro?
Yeah, I couldn't find the unmute button. Anyway, I have a question for Brent. On a call a while back, he mentioned we had to hear something, I think he said 28 times before we really get it. And that goes back to our education, of course. So many of the things we discuss, I think, goes over people's heads because they don't have the background. And I'd like
there is a book out there. I don't know if it was Brent that made that statement, but he might have. And I just don't recall. Maybe I wasn't here. Brent doesn't look like he's here right now. So,
okay.
But there is a book out there, and I don't know that it's the number 28, but there is a certain number. You know, psychologically speaking, that is claimed that if you repeat, a lot of evil people have already said, you repeat the lie long enough, people will believe it. And you'll get look at the deep state has been driven by the lie. Okay, if the people didn't get the lie, we wouldn't have gone through the past 2 years that we've gone through, okay, because of the media putting out the lie. There is a statement out there, if you repeat a certain things a certain amount of times, and I think it's less than 28, that psychologically people start to unconsciously start to receive that as a fact. And if you don't think about these things, your brain will get confused, and when you go to reach into it to respond with a conversation, you'll be pulling out the lies because you don't know the difference between the truth and the lies. And that's why, you know, when it comes to things that are important, like your spiritual life, your political life, your judicial life, and you should have all three lives going on. If you don't, then you need to figure out why. But, you know, we need to be knowledgeable in those areas, and we cannot trust the opinion of another person in those areas. You know, we need to receive it and follow up on it to see if it's real. You know, when I used to teach the Bible, and I used to run a lot of studies, And when I was teaching, I gave tremendous amounts of scripture constantly on to make the proof of the meaning of a word, the meaning of a phrase, and show the consistency of its meaning in order to have a proper understanding. And whenever we write here at National Liberty Alliance, we give tremendous amounts of sources and proofs and stuff so people can find it very quickly. I get very frustrated when I go out on the web and I try to get answers to certain things, but they never give me the meat and potatoes. They give me the pablum. They give me their conclusions. It's not good for me. I want more. Where did you get this conclusion? Where was the argument? Where was the debate you listened to? I want to go listen too. I want to figure it out for myself. And people need to start thinking. This is how you train your children in school, to think for themselves. And we don't train our children to think for themselves. You know, our schools don't do that. So we have people that are coming out of school that are just becoming minions for the New World Order, ultimately. And they're your children.
Thank you.
Gary?
Yeah, thank you. I know he quoted the number, and I was just curious what it was.
Yeah. But that's fine.
Yeah, I don't think it was that high. I know there's a book out there. Someone shared that with me. They shared the name of the book. I never went out to buy it. I don't think it was 28. I think it was less than that.
Okay, well, you explained it anyway. It's very important. People need to hear things more than once and really concentrate on what they're studying to get the drift many times.
Yeah, just think about how many people still believe and think that Trump has colluded with the Russians. You know? I mean,
yeah.
There's a lot left now that the report has come out and, you know, they're losing ratings and everything else and they're running in panic modes and they're contradicting themselves and they're coming back with trying to correct the stories in a way that they don't have to correct themselves or make a statement of an apology and so on and so forth. And yet even with all that, there's still a large group of people because they're not paying attention. This is where they're getting their source of information. They think it's true. They think it's real. And, you know, I'm really happy to see, when Trump been doing this fake news stuff. From the very first time I heard him say it, I said, okay, this is the way to go. If he says this enough, and he does, he doesn't stop saying it. That's the key. The message is eventually going to get out to everyone. Fake news.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay. Time to close down.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, good night, everybody. I apologize for earlier, the problems we had, and, couldn't get things off on the right foot. But Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday, and we'll pick up there. We're going to cover we're trying to do for 2 weeks now, jury nullification is the subject matter we're going to look at next week. Okay, good night. Thanks for coming.